Brexit, austerity, Liz Truss, and latterly, of course, Donald Trump. They are now queuing up to support the idea of a war in Iran being deranged, being waged by a deranged lunatic. And even as the deranged lunatic fails entirely to explain what the war is actually for or about, they continue to support a thing that they neither understand nor can justify. I wonder this morning if we can work out why.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy has rejected suggestions the UK's been too slow in its response to the crisis in the Middle East. Ministers have been criticised for failing to have new defences in place to protect RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus, which was hit by a drone on Sunday. The warship HMS Dragon is not expected to sail to the Eastern Mediterranean until next week. Speaking to LBC, Mr Lammy insisted that the UK isn't playing catch-up.
Well, there was rapid deployment into pre-deployment into the region from January and February. That's why F-35s were in the region. That's why radar is in the region. We've got 400 personnel dealing with air defences across the region. HMS Dragon will be in the region in the coming weeks. That is not the only capability we have to protect air defences in Cyprus and across the Gulf.
Mr Lammy also told LBC more flights will be scheduled to get Britain's home from the Middle East in the coming days. More than 140,000 people have told the Foreign Office they want help to leave the region. The first government chartered flight landed back at Stansted Airport from Oman overnight. These people were on board.
We actually left Dubai on Saturday when it all started. We just thought, well, it'd be safer to drive to Muscat.
We've been travelling for about 42 hours from Dubai. We left yesterday lunchtime. We've travelled straight to the airport in Oman and then waited at the airport yesterday for 8 hours.
The US has eased its embargo on Russian oil after prices rose because of the Iran war. India has been given a 30-day waiver to buy Russian sanctioned oil to help keep supplies flowing in the global market. Earlier this week, President Trump said that the US Navy would escort tankers through the Strait of Hormuz if necessary to protect international supplies. The shipping route's been effectively closed by Iran's threats to target vessels. One other story this morning, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. They're accused of spying on locations and people linked to the Jewish community in London. The group were detained at addresses in Barnet and Watford by counter-terror officers earlier. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up three at 10,415. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Café Nero with Comparsa Market. Take it away, Sergeant.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And I almost feel that I should apologise to people who are still clinging to the carcass of the idea that Donald Trump was anything other than a depraved and deranged lunatic. This show must be unbearable listening for you. Sort of just not even a very big mirror that I hold up every morning and you look in it and see a complete idiot. And I say that with great affection. You know, we've all done idiotic things in our lives, but if you're not yet ready to admit that you were a bit of an idiot when you allowed your whatever it was, racism, misogyny, latent sort of fraudulent belief that you might somehow profit from climate change denial. Is there anything else that we could put on that list that sort of tickled your fancy, the way he treated women? Did you like that? Did you like that? Steve knows what I'm talking about. He's been in touch already. He says, I'm just wondering if you have any other tunes to play. I hate Donald Trump and the Tories. Becomes a bit tedious when it's the only tune you play all day, every day. Listen, Steve, it's easy to get through this period of your life. You just need to let go of your support for the man who sued a woman who accused him of rape for libel and lost. The multiple felon, the man who lies about elections. If you can just let go of that, and I don't know whether you like the self-confessed sex offending more than the racism, or whether it's the racism that you like more than the misogyny, or maybe it's the climate change denial that tickles the cockles of your what passes for your heart. But if you can, I promise you, mate, if you can let go of it, your life will improve, and she may even let you see the kids again. It's 4 minutes after ten. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And we turn our attention today to people like Steve, who have been categorically wrong about everything now for the best part of a decade. We are thinking of Boris Johnson, Brexit, austerity, Liz Truss, and latterly Donald Trump. We are looking at YouGov polling that shows, wait for it, 8% of Britons think the UK should be actively joining the US-Israeli attack on Iran. And we are looking at our corporate media and seeing that approximately 80 or 90% of its commentators and contributors think that the United Kingdom is somehow embarked upon a shameful or a cowardly pass. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail responds to news of a school being blown up by probably American forces in Iran by being ashamed that the Brits aren't involved in that kind of activity. He's never been more ashamed in his life than in the week that we failed to join a war which began by bombing a girls' school. And these people, of course, have led the line in this country on all sorts of positions that have been all sorts of wrong. Demonstrably, provably, irrefutably wrong. Brexit, an absolute disaster. Liz Truss, an absolute disaster. Boris Johnson, an absolute disaster. Austerity, an absolute disaster. And when they dip their curdled little toes into international relations, Donald Trump, an absolute disaster. But I'm worried about something called manufactured consent. It's a well-established theory. Unfortunately, given that he has been utterly... what would the right word be? Discredited seems so mild, doesn't it, to describe people that were very, very tight with Jeffrey Epstein. But Noam Chomsky, a brilliant, brilliant thinker, was incredibly tight with Jeffrey Epstein. And unlike Donald Trump, who was also, of course, incredibly tight with Jeffrey Epstein for many, many years, Chomsky has sort of paid the price in terms of reputation and credibility. But he co-wrote a book a few years ago, I forget precisely when, called, or one of the subtitles of it was Manufactured Consent. And it's one of those things, or it was called Manufacturing Consent, the Political Economy of the Mass Media. It's published in 1988, just as I was preparing to do my A-levels, or beginning my two-year A-level course. And it is absolutely fascinating, because it speaks directly to the way in which we are cajoled and persuaded, we are gaslit and groomed, into acting against our own interests. And it's not something... I mean, I'm 54 years old now, if you're newish to the programme, and I've been engaged in these kind of issues for about 21, 22 years, a bit longer, say 24 or 25. It wasn't what drew me into journalism in the first place. I wanted to be a book reviewer or a theatre critic, and then I became a gossip columnist, and after that I was a showbiz journalist, and then a brief foray as a video games reviewer. But I didn't ever think I would end up in this kind of world. And I turned up here a few years, many, many years ago, because I had a tax bill to pay and someone had suggested I might be able to do a shift for them. And I came in and I fell in love. The minute I sat behind this microphone, I fell in love. But one of the things I love most about it, I fell in love with you in a way, actually. Not you. One of the things I love about it most is that I am constantly taken by surprise. Constantly taken by surprise. I'm constantly learning. It's odd, really, because the traditional proponents of this format never learn anything. They keep hitting the same drums and indulging the same prejudices, airing the same bigotries, and making the same mistakes year after year, after month, after week, after day. You can spot them from a mile off. They use phrases like Trump derangement syndrome or Brexit means Brexit to disguise the fact that they're supporting something they can neither explain, articulate, justify, or understand. And I've just got a horrible feeling that it's happening again with this war. Dick Littlejohn has never been more ashamed to be British, while 8% of the population think that we should be getting involved in the thing that he's deeply ashamed we're not involved in. I mean, that is an extraordinary moment. And the reason why it gives me trepidation, not because of Call Me Dick, but because, oh, sorry, Dick by name, but because he represents the sort of the gristly rump of this right-wing mass media who have the loudest opinions and the tiniest understanding of issues. And I worry, because is that 8% going to grow? This is the theory that is explored in Manufacturing Consent. It essentially explains how mass communication media, and it focuses on America, but where they lead, we follow, are effective and powerful ideological institutions that carry out a system-supportive propaganda fungal flipping act. Basically, they persuade people into positions that are against their own interests. Can you think of an example from recent years of a population being persuaded to vote against its own interests? I don't know, off the top of my head. Can you think of any example of... How about being persuaded to become the first population in the history of humanity to impose economic sanctions on itself? Yeah? Got it? Yeah, thought so. How about greeting a budget that was visible from outer space as an imminent disaster for the British economy as the best thing since sliced bread? Which, of course, the Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph, Nigel Farage, all of them queued up to tell you that Liz Truss was an economic genius and this was finally going to deliver the sort of fillip that the country desperately needed. Fast forward about 27 seconds and we're on the precipice of unprecedented economic collapse. But remember, it wasn't the fault of Liz Truss, or indeed the cheerleaders that she had in the UK media or in UK politics. It was all the fault of the woke mind virus and transgender civil servants. Whew. And of course, these people still have a stranglehold on public discourse, which is one of the reasons why I love my job, because I get to point it out. And there aren't many of us, and that's not a coincidence. There aren't many of us. I get to point it out. The people who are catastrophically and categorically wrong about everything have a stranglehold on the UK media, and traditionally and historically, they have managed to persuade us, the public, to do the things that are against our own interests. Now, whether it's because they are on the payroll, or because they are deluded, or because they are themselves gaslit, or because they are morally corrupt, or very, very stupid, or stubborn, mutton-headed oafs, I will never know. I mean, there can't be one explanation that explains all of them, but stick them on a list, and it will be as long as both your arms. Wrong about Brexit, wrong about Boris Johnson, wrong about COVID, wrong about Liz Truss, wrong about austerity, and wrong about Donald Trump. And here they are now, being paid huge sums of money to be wrong about whatever the next thing is. Oh, the next thing is war. The next thing is the war in Iran. 8% of the UK public, 8% of Britons think that the UK should be actively joining the US-Israeli attack on Iran. Just shy of half think that we should be adopting a purely defensive position, shooting down drones and defending civilian areas. That number, I fear, can only really go in one direction. I look at the effort. The effort is frankly extraordinary, being put into completely ignoring public opinion and instead trying to manufacture it. It is absolutely breathtaking to me. I've never seen anything like it before, but I can't remember coverage in the early days of the Iraq war. But I think public opinion on Iraq was it not equally split? Perish the thought that it might even have been 52-48. Daily Express front page, we can't stand by and expect others to help Britain, says Kemi Badenoch, who also believes that we should stop giving benefits to children and spend all the money instead on bombs. Starmer, US must negotiate with Iran. Desperate and deluded is the front page of the Daily Mail. Desperate and deluded. This a position that is shared by 92% of the UK public, who are against the idea that we should be joining a war against Iran. So, we established yesterday, beyond any doubt, and this isn't boasting or showing off or even offering an opinion, it's just counting. We established yesterday, beyond any doubt, that nobody knows, nobody who supports the war can tell you what it's for. because even if they offer up an explanation, it will be contradicted 10 minutes later by the same people, by the same regime, the same administration. So let's add to the Trump regime the cheerleaders for the Trump regime, whether they're on the other side of the Atlantic or on this one. If any of them stand up and say, we need to fight this war because, then within 5 minutes, somebody else will stand up and say something that makes a complete mockery of their original claims. We need to fight this war because of the nuclear capability that doesn't exist and that we also claimed we'd completely destroyed 9 months ago. We need to fight this war because of the terrible human rights abuses being visited upon Iranian civilians. Okay, so what are you doing? Oh, we're killing Iranian civilians. How does that one work? We need to change the regime in Iran. Oh, okay, that makes sense. No, we don't want to change the regime in Iran, says another member of the regime in Washington. It's God's will, is reportedly what some troops are being told by their commanding officers. We're fighting this war because Armageddon is coming and we all want to be in place when the prophecies of the Book of Revelations come to pass. I wish I was exaggerating. If you think I am, listen to yesterday's programme. And that is just a small selection of some of the reasons that have been offered up for the continuing war in Iran. And the British public at the moment, are seeing through all the arguments in favour of it. So, in slightly less striking numbers, are the American public. But the point here is, for the first time I can remember, on this long and catastrophic course of national self-destruction, the public are not yet persuaded to join in. They're not yet persuaded to be in favour of it. We voted for Brexit. We voted for Boris Johnson. We didn't vote for Liz Truss, but the people who told us to vote for Brexit and Boris Johnson told us Liz Truss was going to be a genius. And, in many ways, we voted for austerity. We never voted for Donald Trump. But we are being told by the people who supported all of the things that we've just heard that Donald Trump would be brilliant, that he'd be brilliant for Britain. People are publicly expressing the desire that he govern our country instead of Keir Starmer. People who must love the self-confessed sex offending, or just the moral corruption, the moral bankruptcy. Is it the misogyny you like most, or is it the racism? Is it the climate change denial, or is it the self-confessed sex offending? Is it the felonies, or is it the bankruptcies? It's so sort of easy to hold this mirror up, but it can't be easy to look in it. Must be awful. And all you have to do is look away. And today, looking away from that mirror in which you see yourself in all your hideous wrong glory, is to not support this war. To acknowledge that Keir Starmer is playing an absolute blinder. And that you are in lockstep with, if you support it, you think that we should have got involved, you're in lockstep with just 8% of the British population. 8%. So, 17 minutes after 10, you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and I'm probably more interested in you and me trying to work out the positions that other people hold. It's gone a bit Brexity, hasn't it? Do you remember when Brexit means Brexit became a catchphrase, or let's go WTO? You just give people something they can shout to disguise the fact that they understand nothing and they can't tell you why they support the thing that they are very passionate and adamant about supporting. Vox pops were extraordinary during that period when they actually made it to the screen. You'd have people claiming that they were casting a vote for reasons that didn't even make sense to them. As they spoke, you could see the confusion writ large upon their own faces. But they'd shout things like, Brexit means Brexit, or let's go WTO. And if you tugged the tiniest thread, the whole thing would fall apart. And it was very good and very entertaining. And it changed the fortunes of this radio show in ways that were, genuinely extraordinary and continue to be. But it wasn't that nourishing. It became a spectator sport. We were perhaps a tiny bit voyeuristic, or we indulged in schadenfreude, amused or entertained by the idiocy of our neighbours who couldn't tell us why they had voted to become part of the first population in human history to impose economic sanctions on itself. Maybe we should have spent more time then working out what was going on. And that's what I want to do today. So why is the corporate media in the United Kingdom backing a foreign war over its own democratically elected prime minister? Why is the corporate media in the United Kingdom supporting a deranged lunatic's quite probably illegal adventures in Iran over its own sovereignty? Why do they hate sovereignty so much? They're literally now writing columns about how in the good old days we'd follow America blindly into war, regardless of the reasons or the consequences. Harold Wilson not getting mentioned as much as he should be this week, because, of course, he said no when they asked him to go to war in Vietnam, and he was proved categorically right by events and by history. That's the big parallel here. That and Iraq. We'll be meeting later in the programme an MP who you may not have heard of, but you should have done, because he served in Iraq. And he is profoundly concerned about the parallels and the echoes of this march towards war. But here's the thing that fascinates me most. It's not working. It's not working. 8% of the British public sit alongside the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mail and the Daily Express and the Sun, and to a lesser extent the Times. 8% sit along Kemi Badenoch and Nigel Farage and the other brain-dead warmongers. 8% of the British population. Who speaks for them? Who speaks for them? That's actually a rhetorical question, because the answer is nobody. Living in a country with a pluralistic media, who speaks for the people who aren't in the 8% that don't want a war? So here's the question. Why are they doing it? Why are they doing it? 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. Why are they doing it? Why is, and I don't use this phrase very often, but it really fits today, why is the corporate media so desperate for the United Kingdom to abandon sovereignty and blindly follow Donald Trump and Israel, a deranged lunatic and a genocidal regime, into an almost certainly illegal war in Iran, that they cannot, in a month of Sundays, explain the reason for? Why are they doing it? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 60 60 973, because that 8%, that 8% is historically tiny. And my fear is it can only move in one direction. And the effort that is being put into moving it in one direction is immense. It's up there with Brexit. It's up there with Iraq. But it's starting from a much, much smaller base, which gives me hope that this time, decency, comprehension and intelligence will prevail over bigotry, idiocy and Dick Littlejohn's worldview. But why are they doing it? You can pick a favourite if you want, or you can focus on the broad homogenous phenomenon of corporate media. Why are they doing it? What allows them to pretend that Iraq never happened, to pretend that Donald Trump isn't a deranged lunatic, to pretend that Benjamin Netanyahu isn't genocidal? What allows that? Or maybe they welcome, or I don't know. See what I mean? There's loads of room for you to play today. Why are they doing it? 0345 60 60 973.
LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield, or do an average week of driving on a single charge. They're ecstatic about that, and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with overnight charging, they can enjoy a morning coffee without the rush. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play.
Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Caterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears, and four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes!
Knock Hatch Adventure Park.
The fun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at knockhatch.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 24 minutes after 10, and we find ourselves once again seeking to understand positions held by people who don't understand their own positions. Wow. That's Joseph Heller all over again, isn't it? So the people that want Keir Starmer to go headlong into war in Iran don't understand what the war is for because nobody can tell them. If they tell them on a Monday that it's about regime change, they'll tell them on a Tuesday that it isn't. If they tell them on a Wednesday that it's about human rights abuses, they'll end up on a Thursday defending human rights abuses. If they tell them it's about God's will, they probably pretend they didn't hear that bit because even they wouldn't be able to defend the absolute weapons-grade bonkersness of it all. So they don't know why they support the war. But I want you to tell me why they do. Because it's got nothing to do with any of the reasons that have been offered, and something to do with something else. Psychology? Pathology? Psychopathy? I don't know. Emma Salua is in Fulham. Emma Salua, what would you like to say?
Hi, morning, James. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. How's married life?
Yeah, it's good. We've married for, a month and a week.
Wow, so, fantastic. Are you going to celebrate? Is that an anniversary? I don't know if that one is.
Look, I'm not a Gen Z, I'm a millennial. Do we do these things? I don't know.
Well, you let me know when you've worked it out. Anyway, what's
I'll
on your mind
you
this morning?
I'll let you know. I think it goes back to the thing that you've always said about kind of like getting people to vote against their own interests. So it's the B word. It's the rise of reform and the move to the right. Because if you really look at what all these people probably write about, they'll probably tell you that Nigel Farage is the best thing that will probably ever happen to this country.
Yes.
And I think it's genuinely getting people, it's almost like a smokescreen. It's like encouraging people to not see the thing that is in front of your eyes. I think people are kind of being forced to think about the war as if we don't know what war is, as if Iraq was 30 years ago and people don't remember.
Do you think they were right about Iraq? If you could find them, if you could get them in the room where it happens, and you said, do you still think that was the right thing to do? Would it be like Brexit? Would they say, yes, there was a brilliant campaign in Iraq, but it goes to a different school. It could have all gone so differently if only.
Absolutely.
We were definitely right to support it. It's obviously not the fault of people who supported it that it all went so horribly wrong. It's all the fault of Gary Lineker and Carol Vorderman.
Absolutely. They'll tell you that there was one small thing that went wrong, and had that small thing not went wrong, the entire campaign would have been fantastic. I also think they really hate Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
They really hate that man. They want that man out so badly that they are willing to do anything at this point, which makes you question. These people tell you they're patriotic. I love this country. I'm all of these things. Yet you're willing to get rid of a democratically elected man because you want to go to war with Iran because of an Oompa Loompa? No, thank you.
It almost makes me think I should like him more. When they hate him so much, I think, what is he doing so well that they're so bent and angry that I haven't yet seen?
He's playing by the rules.
Well, I know in this week he is. I don't mean on this particular contest. I mean, why did they hate him long before Donald Trump decided to, or Benjamin Netanyahu told him to bomb Iran? Now, he's not a particularly left-wing politician. He's not, maybe he is. Maybe he's more effective and more radical than we give him credit for. And we've all been gaslit into thinking that he's ineffective. So, go on.
I'm sorry. I don't think he's right enough for them.
Yeah.
I don't think he bends enough for them. I think Keir Starmer bends too much, but he doesn't bend enough for them. He doesn't do what they want him. He can't be molded in the way that they want him to. Like, okay, so last week, Nigel Farage came out and said something about work from home is the worst thing in the world and everybody's going back to give all... Nigel Farage will do whatever you want him to do. He will do whatever you want him... And Keir Starmer won't. And I genuinely think that's why people are now like, yeah.
So I'm looking at the funding for reform this morning, which is now higher than it is for either Labour or the Conservatives. Massive chunks of cash being put in there by cryptocurrency entrepreneurs. I think there was a time, and I might have pushed back a little bit against what you said on the grounds that it sounds a little bit too straightforward. It's not just as simple as you make a massive donation to a political party and then they pass laws that make you richer. But have a look at what's going on in the United States. The fortunes of the billionaires have increased while the income of the poorest paid has decreased, and everybody still votes for him. So the war is not actually about any of the things that are happening in the Middle East, in that if we could cut them open and dig into their DNA, it would actually just all be about what they're opposed to. So they don't mind the idea of people in the Middle East dying, brown-skinned people, Muslim people dying. Obviously, they're supremely comfortable with that, which is why they still struggle to talk about what went on in Gaza, that they cheered on, of course, all the time. So they don't mind that, but they don't really care about what happens in Iran. They just want an opportunity to attack Keir Starmer for being, let me just get my Daily Mail front page, desperate and deluded.
Absolutely.
And in agreement with 92% of Britons.
Yeah. Wow. The West has never really cared about what's gone on in the Middle East. The West has never really cared, or to the extent that it's within their interests. But you can't tell me that the West really, really cares, the US, the UK, really care about the day-to-day lives of people in the Middle East. Otherwise, they'd act very differently. They don't care.
And the opportunity to attack Keir Starmer is one not to be missed. There is a second dimension. Thank you, Amy. There's a second dimension to this question, which is, why isn't it working? Ooh, 10:30, and the second question might be even more interesting than the first one. Why are they doing it, and why isn't it working? We've got two phone lines free. Three, actually, when Imisalua hangs up. So you can answer the second question as well if you want now. Why isn't it working? I don't want to contemplate the possibility that it will, but at the moment it's not working at all. Desperate and deluded, screams the Daily Mail. I'm ashamed to be British, screams Dick by name Little John. 8% of the British public agree with them. Why isn't it working? Why are they doing it, and why isn't it working? Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy has told LBC the government is planning more flights to get people home from the Middle East. More than 140,000 people have told the Foreign Office they want help to leave the region. The first government chartered flight landed back at Stansted Airport from Oman overnight. Mr. Lammy's also rejected suggestions that the UK is playing catch-up in deploying defences to the Middle East. Ministers have been criticised for failing to have new defences in place to protect RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus, which was hit by a drone on Sunday. Two defensive Wildcat helicopters are due to arrive on the island today. One other story, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. The investigation relates to the suspected surveillance of locations and individuals linked to the Jewish community in London. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are.
Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
When laughter's guaranteed, when there's fun and games with big names, when it's something everyone in the family loves watching.
Who do you think the surprise guest is?
No way you'll top last week's.
I think they have.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, packed full of entertainment for a big night in. Search TV licence together.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 10:34. If Kemi Badenoch didn't exist, I think satirists would probably have to invent her. But if Keir Starmer had shut his eyes and followed Donald Trump into this war, I absolutely 110% supportive of all of it, up to and including the probable illegality, what would she have done? She's not capable. Probably the first leader of the opposition I can remember ever who is simply not capable of collegiate thinking. She's not capable. If ever there was a politician created in the crucible of footballification, it's Kemi Badenoch. I understand nothing. It's a great line in The Guardian today about what her future holds. John Crace suggests that one day she'll be sacked from a think tank for being unable to think, which is a beautiful distillation of her possible future. But she doesn't understand anything, as she demonstrates every week at PMQs. She thinks she's a genius, as she demonstrates every week at PMQs. But she is almost biologically opposed to anything that the government does. So if the government had come out and said, if Keir Starmer had said, unlike any other leader in the world except Benjamin Netanyahu, we are fully behind Donald Trump's adventures in Iran, what would she actually have done? This is a genuine question, but it's not a phone-in. Because she'd have had to have found a way to complain, wouldn't she? So I don't know how she would have done that. She couldn't possibly have said, it's in the national interest and it is our patriotic duty to support the Prime Minister during this very difficult time. She'd have had to complain about that. I don't know what the newspapers would have done if Keir Starmer had gone against the wishes of 92% of the population and led us into a war that nobody wants. Would the newspapers have found a way to attack him? Because I'm thinking about Emmis Lewis' theory, that they hate him so much that they will attack him whatever the context. And I just wonder whether they would have attacked him if he'd actually gone down the line. Would Dick Littlejohn be writing a column about how he's never been more ashamed to be British because we are hand in hand with the regime that has just, it appears, New York Times reports, it was the Americans that bombed the girls' school in Iran. Would make you ashamed to be British, right? If you'd been part of that and you were normal, if you're Dick by name Littlejohn, it makes you ashamed to be British that we're not involved in that. But what if he had done it? What if we'd bombed a girls' school in Iran by accident? What would they be doing now? I don't know. But I want to know why they're doing it. Why is the corporate media in this country supporting a war, supporting a course of action that only 8% of the population want? And why isn't it working? Alex is in Oxford. Alex, what would you like to say?
Hello. I'd like to say that it's a form of relentless campaigning on...
I'm going to try and improve your phone line, mate. Don't just bear with. Diane's in Amersham. Diane, what would you like to say?
Well, I'm an American, and I love your show.
Thank you.
And I think that the allure of Trump for corporate... I think definitely in the U.S. and most likely in the U.K., there's a strong allure, and I think it's all fueled by fear of immigration. And I think that corporate, at least in the U.S., corporate media has a vested interest in Trump succeeding. And there's such a push to not be woke and to not worry about, you know, if in the U.S., if they're not worried that they bombed a girls' school, they don't really care. And I think that, as I was saying before to the person who talked to me, the U.S., when I meet people here, and they say, oh, you're American, hands down, when they like Donald Trump, the number one thing they say is, but he's so good on immigration. And if I counter with, how about all the illegal things that he's done? No one cares.
Because they're rounding up foreigners, whether they are illegal or legal, or American citizens are getting shot, exactly. But they're rounding up the fight. And he said it was going to be criminals. He said it was going to be gang members. He said it was going to be people who eat cats and dogs, but it's gardeners and grocery clerks and Uber drivers. He's just, we hate the foreigners. Chuck them all out.
And people, when I point that out, that he's you know, doing things to citizens, he's killing people. Well, that's what it takes to get rid of immigration. And we are primed to fear if you know, I think that people really jump on board with the fear. And I'm not saying that maybe immigration is horrible here. I don't want to comment on that. But
sure.
I think that there is this, the fear is so great, just like with Hitler, the fear of the other and the strangers.
But why does that translate to support for this war in Iran?
Because
it's support for everything he does, because we love the racism so much.
Every single thing he's done. I mean, it gets more and more outrageous. No one cares. He's bombing Venezuelan boats without any evidence that they're drug dealers.
Cuba next.
Oh, well. Yeah, it just doesn't matter. You know, he made a joke early on that he could go into Times Square and kill someone and no one would do anything, and he could.
I was talking to Anthony Scaramucci about that on Tuesday night, and he picked up on that as well. I used to obsess about that memory because it feels to me like such a fascinating prediction.
What a thing to say.
Yeah, but it was a prediction. It demonstrated his... And the thing that he grasped... And that perhaps we missed, you probably didn't, but I did, was the vocabulary of grievance. So you can simultaneously know that he cares not one jot for the dispossessed Dust Bowl residents or for the people whose jobs haven't seen their wages rise while the profits being made by their executives have gone off the charts.
Exactly, yeah.
They live lives of grievance. And he understands grievance because he is perpetually aggrieved. So he doesn't care about their grievances, but he speaks the language of grievance. And they see someone compared to a Hillary Clinton or even a Bill Clinton.
Exactly.
And they don't speak the language of grievance, so they're not Trump's people. Scaramucci's brilliant on this. So they are Trump's people, even as he despises and derides them. He speaks the language of grievance, and they love him for it, and they always will, even if he starts shooting them on Fifth Avenue or on the streets of Minneapolis.
It's crazy. And, you know, your caller pointed out that he doesn't really care about the people of Iran.
Of course
and,
not.
You know, he was saying, you know, his big thing, oh, they're such horrible, you know, Khomeini has killed all these people. Mm. And then he says we have to do a regime change, and then after he changed his mind several different times, now when asked, what happens if someone worse gets in? Well, that would be bad.
You know how it works. He says one thing and then sets five other hairs running because he's now said he has to have a big part in
the choosing
the future one. He said that Cuba could be next. It is impossible almost to keep all of these plates spinning at the same time when you're in the simple business of just trying to keep up and understand what is going on.
Is this all because, you know, is this just more distraction because of the Epstein files?
Yes, that's a big part of it. I mean, I'd take that to the wire, that belief. I was allergic to dead cats 6 months ago. I got very, very, very impatient with people who'd say, oh, it's just a dead cat, because it seemed like a simple answer to a complicated question. But of course he's desperate to keep the Epstein files out of the news, and they're not going away. The latest reports from your home country show that the administration is set to release 50,000 more missing documents from the Epstein files, and allegations against the US president will be contained within them. Nancy Mace has...
We can only hope.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But why isn't it working then? I mean, I think you suggest it is working in the States. The polling doesn't necessarily endorse that fear or that view. But why is it faring so badly here? Only 8% of the public want to go down the line that almost all of the corporate media is screaming that we should have gone down, that Keir Starmer should have gone down.
Well, I'm hoping that the citizens here are more thoughtful, and regardless of, I think
you've heard of Brexit. You've heard of Brexit, have you?
I know, but I wonder though. I feel like people, because in the U.S., people don't even care if they're mired down in another war. They're just I think half the country does, but the other half, even though Trump ran on this platform of not being involved, no regime changes, no wars, and I don't know. There's a video of him degrading Obama, saying that if he was elected, he would for sure get into Iranian war because he doesn't know how to be a diplomat.
Well, no, it's worse. He said his polling's bad, so he'll start a war.
Yeah.
Hello?
I was going to say, it's almost exactly what he says about someone else is what's true about him.
Yeah.
And so he does that, And I think Americans don't care, but I feel like I think British people really are concerned about financial impacts of getting involved in a war and the
moral dimension. Increasingly, I think we care about the moral dimension. And
I hope so. Yes.
My therapist used to say, if you point a finger at somebody, it means there's three fingers pointing back at you, Diane. And that's Donald Trump in a nutshell, isn't it? you're this, you're that, you're the other. And then he proves that he's 10 times all of those things. And there's so many examples of it. The most obvious being, of course, accusing Barack Obama of being about to start a war with Iran because his opinion polls were so low, which is Donald Trump literally going, what would I do if I was Barack Obama? Oh, I'd start a war with Iran. I bet he's about to start a war with Iran because his opinion polls are so low. But I want you to think about that language of grievance, that point that Scaramucci and I were discussing the other night. And he is going to come on Full Disclosure, I think, when his book comes out in September. But Farage does it as well. So people who are aggrieved about the way their life has gone, often through no fault of their own, remember, but if there were to be fault, it would lie with the people who've got richer and richer and richer while they've got poorer, or they've raised children who will be poorer than them. Farage is psychologically in a state of permanent grievance. Whether or not it's because he is desperate for the love of an absent alcoholic father, or whether it's because he has some kind of psychological hunger inside him that can never be filled. He thinks that by hurting other people, the pain inside him will go away. Trump is exactly the same. They might not look similar, but there's a reason why people describe him as the pound shop Trump. They think that by hurting other people, they will make the pain inside themselves go away. And that is a grievance that they carry into every corner of their existence. And other people defined by grievance are drawn towards that. They gravitate towards it. But the grievance might be completely different. And of course, when they come along, both of these men come along and say, the reason why you're unhappy or unfulfilled or you haven't got what you want is those brown people over there. It's those foreigners over there. And I speak the language of grievance almost on a subconscious level. I feel what you feel. That's why they like him. And Farage is exactly the same. He is defined by grievance and an internal gnawing sense of pain and inadequacy. And people with genuine grievances gravitate towards that. And it's why politicians who are happy and fulfilled and not defined by grievance are having such a tough time of it at the moment. It's why people like Dick by name Little John hate Keir Starmer. Because Keir Starmer is clearly a happy, fulfilled, successful, intelligent, emotionally literate man. He might be a bit dull, but he's not consumed by self-loathing or a desperate desire for the approval of parents who hated him. He is a good man from a good family with a good background and good values. And they can't deal with that. Donald Trump, Nigel Farage, all of their cheerleaders in the media, all they need is therapy. I'm not attacking them or criticizing them. I'm just diagnosing them. All they need is therapy to realize you can't change the way the world treats you by trying to change the world. What Trump does all the time. He's bombing Iran now. He wants to change the way the world makes him feel by trying to change the world. The only way you can change the way you feel is by changing yourself.
This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
AO members get 10% off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Haier, AEG and Hisense. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at $39.99.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. and she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Here's a headline. What's it going to do to you? I mean, I don't particularly relish the prospect of talking to boneheaded lemmings who are currently in the 8% of the UK population. That, and it's even less support than Nigel Farage has got. Is support for the war. Considerably less support. He's got quite a lot of support in the country at the moment for reasons that we just nailed a moment ago. But imagine you were in that category of people who love this war, possibly because of that hat-trick of horrors that explains support for politicians like Trump or Farage, the racism, the misogyny, the climate change denial. Just tell me how you'd process this headline in today's newspapers. All right, crucial point there. Today's newspapers. Iranians fleeing war head for Britain on small boats. Iranians fleeing war head for Britain on small boats. So how do you feel about the war? Love it. Love it. How do you feel about the war, Nigel? Love it. It's great. I love it. I love it. Kill more. More people. The browner they are, the more they deserve to die. Okay, and how do you feel about the small boats? Bomb them. Get rid of... But the war is causing a refugee crisis. The war is going to cause three things, we know already. But possibly. These are possibles. Probables and currentlies. A refugee crisis. It's already causing refugees to flee and to cross the channel or to seek to get into this country on small boats. Direct consequence of the war. So these are Trump's refugees. And it could reach crisis levels, of course, the longer the war goes on. We heard yesterday from nuclear experts that this could actually backfire and accelerate Iranian attempts to develop nuclear capabilities or to develop hideous weaponry. And the third thing that we know is that it renders the likelihood of civil war in Iran much higher, which would itself track back to the refugee crisis. 20% of the population, as Balama explained to us quite perfectly yesterday, are comfortable with and supportive of the status quo. 20% of the population supportive of the regime. And they've got all the guns. They've got all the weapons. So if the people were to rise up against the regime, then 20% of the people would support the regime. And they've got all the weapons, they've got all the infrastructure, they've got all the vehicles, they've got all the armoured cars, they've got all the tanks, they've got all the missiles. Donald Trump sitting in his Florida bolt hole, calling for the Iranian people to rise up. With what? Oh no, but we definitely support it. We're ashamed to be British. These people are monstrous in their casual ignorance and their absolute absence of interest in things. Except the atavistic two-dimensional invitations to pick a side and start screaming. And I that's why, perhaps, the more interesting question for the second hour will be, why is it not working? Because it usually does. Why are they doing it? Why isn't it working? Jim's in Walthamstow. Jim, what would you like to say?
Hello, mate. Hello, how are you doing? You're doing well.
You're very kind. Thank you, Jim. What made you pick up the phone today?
Well, I mean, I agree with what you and some of the people calling you are saying about it's to it's to keep the focus on immigration and specifically on Muslims. But I want to read you a quote, a very brief quote from Orwell. And Orwell says, the war is waged by the ruling group against its own subjects, and its object is not the victory at all over either Eurasia or East Asia, or in this case, Iran, but to keep the structure of society intact. I think Trump is using war, and I think the media, because it is a diversion. Recently, the narrative in Britain is that UK is starting to change away from immigration towards the super rich, and the super rich are the people who run the big corporations.
And we saw this in Gorton and Denton, I think.
Yes, but even before that, it was beginning. So there's that dimension, because they see the narrative changing in this country. But there's also a strategy to appease Trump, MAGA. Because they
If I was the owner of the Daily Mail, why would I be telling my columnist to appease Trump? Oh, one of them, Andrew Neil, a few weeks ago, had the good grace and integrity to actually acknowledge that Trump was a direct threat to democracy. But he's back on side now, calling for more war.
Why would the
owner of the Daily Mail be so desperate to... Well, I know they've got business interests in the United States that they never tell us about.
But isn't Trump... Because they probably regard Trump as a danger to some extent to their own vested interest. It's the whole drift. If you'll be aware about the strategy document they released for Europe.
Yes.
Talking about...
Bigging up the far right.
Yeah, how they want true patriots in this country to succeed. Meaning Farage and the leader of the Tory party.
And patriots are the people who slag off their own country while cozying up to foreign... dictators, because Farage, of course, loves Vladimir Putin as well as Donald Trump.
Of course, but what that would do is consolidate their power. People like James Ratcliffe guy at Man United are coming onto the bandwagon, thinking they can influence people as a super rich. And why aren't people going down that line?
Yeah.
Because thank God... And thank God, and this is the hope. I talked to a few of you about hope before, James.
Yeah, go on.
They believe the truth of their own eyes. They see Gaza.
Really?
And I think that.
I hope you're right.
A lot of us watch TV. We see Gaza, Minneapolis, a trail of kind of things that America, Netanyahu, these leaders are involved in, which pricks our. If you like, it kind of our moral compass. It kind of goes towards, deflects and goes against and sees that this is wrong, And when we see bombs falling again in Iran without any legal justification, we start thinking to ourselves, well, the people are going to get blown up, and that's what you're talking about—the moral dimension. So I think it's multi-layered.
You've hung on to it, haven't you? You've hung on to your faith in humanity throughout all the madness of the last 10 years, and I'm feeling a bit inspired by you, actually. But that voice in my head is going, it'll change. They'll manufacture consent for this, just like they manufactured consent for Brexit, for Boris Johnson, for austerity, and crucially, I think, in the context of this conversation, Jim, for the Iraq war.
But not
for the genocide. I mean, they tried desperately, didn't they? And that was another area where public opinion was completely at odds with what the usual blowhards were belching into their microphones or writing in their op-eds. They tried desperately hard to pretend that the British public was four square behind the genocide in Gaza, but we weren't. We just weren't, although you wouldn't know that from looking at the average newspaper.
No, you wouldn't. But what they do, though, is they press buttons that appeal to people's narrow-mindedness in communities where they are not brown-faced for Muslim people. They push the buttons, and those buttons then move people towards the right. But when people look beyond, then they see things more clearly, possibly.
Do you think so? Because I normally see social media as a force for bad.
Yes.
And it is, obviously. We met Usman earlier this week, who was attacked in hideous, horrible ways, up to and including death threats, for the crime of being a successful British Pakistani businessman who featured in an advertising campaign for Heathrow Airport, and the ordure, the vile bile that was poured upon him and his family was visible from space, and he dealt with it with such enormous dignity, such inspiring dignity. But that's a consequence of social media. If I'm sitting here wondering why the public isn't falling for the lies about genocide in the first instance and the lies about war in Iran in the most recent, could the answer be that they're getting their guidance somewhere else, that they're finding access to things on social media that they're not being given by corporate media?
I think you're right. And this is why my daughters, I told you about Ruby before, your daughters will be the same. Mm. They're on social media. They're seeing videos on social media they're not seeing on the mainstream. They're massively in favour now. The young are becoming more and more in favour of the Greens, of a different narrative, because they're getting a different input. If they were just watching or listening to people in the mass media, they'd be going down...
They'd be cheering for war. Line. They'd be talking about how ashamed they are to be British. And Starmer is not part of that, oddly. I mean, Polanski, the leader of the Greens, is as critical towards Starmer as he is towards Farage, which I think is a shame, because what Starmer has done is actually highlight the importance of A, international law, B, a lawful basis for war, and C, a thought through viable plan. And that's where what you call mass media is now. They're shouting, you don't need a lawful basis, and you don't need a thoughtful, you don't need a viable thought through plan for war. For war, not for a walk in the park or a Sunday lunch, for an actual bloody war.
It's true that all they want is might is right. And for power to do what it wants. And Starmer, and the law are in the way. And that's why he gets attacked. And if someone else comes in like Starmer, he'll get attacked just the same.
We shouldn't have to obey the laws. Do you remember that woman in the States a few years ago got done for taxes? I think she was called Leonora Helmsley. She ran a hotel chain. I think this was before I worked on LBC. And she said, taxes are for little people. And that was one of those moments where you sort of got a little inkling of how the world works in the rooms that you never go into. These people think laws are for little people, both domestically and internationally. Speaking of taxes, I've got a story for you about how some residents of I don't want to spoil the detail of it, but what I want you to do is go up, pop up into the attic and get that tiny, tiny, tiny little violin out, because we're going to play it after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy has told LBC that more flights are being scheduled to get Britons out of the Middle East. More than 140,000 people have contacted the Foreign Office asking for help to leave. The first government chartered flight landed at Stansted Airport from Oman overnight. Mr. Lammy has told us it remains a fluid situation.
I don't want to say a number, but there are charter flights that we hope, more charter flights in the coming days, that will leave from Oman. You recognise that I'm not a Foreign Office Minister, but I'm nervous about giving numbers, because I say two and then airspace shuts down and flights don't leave is the truth.
Mr. Lammy has also rejected claims the UK is playing catch-up in deploying defences to the Iran conflict. He's defended the deployment of HMS Dragon, which won't leave Portsmouth until next week at the earliest. The Conservatives have also been critical, saying the US has taken offensive action to defend British territory, but the UK hasn't. Shadow Defence Secretary James Cartledge has told LBC News his party would have supported offensive strikes from the start.
The reason for that is that Iran getting a nuclear missile would be an existential threat to us and our allies. So we support the action, but there are risks in it. And in terms of what we should do militarily, what Kemi has been saying is that, unlike the Prime Minister, we think that if offensive action helps defend the United Kingdom and our allies and our bases, that's the sort of action we've been talking about.
Four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. The investigation relates to the suspected surveillance of locations and individuals linked to the Jewish community in London. The group were detained at addresses in Barnet and Watford by counter-terror officers this morning. And the government will boycott tonight's opening ceremony at the Winter Paralympics in Verona. UK officials will stay away in protest following the decision to allow Russian and Belarusian athletes to compete under their own flags. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 9 at 10,423. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You wouldn't steal a car. You wouldn't steal a handbag. You wouldn't enjoy a meal without an ice-cold, refreshing Pepsi Max. A tasty meal without Pepsi Max? That's criminal. Treat your food with respect, because meals are better with Pepsi. See it. Say it. Sip it. Pepsi Max.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 11 is the time. I want to talk about why it's not working now. We touched on it in the last hour, and Jim in Walthamstow gave us a perfect introduction into it. But I want to know why it's not currently working. I'm not as optimistic as Jim. I don't know that the world has turned and that we are now capable of seeing clearly and trusting the evidence of our own eyes and ears, which, of course, Orwell, who Jim also quoted, famously told us was the absolute key, the party's final, most important command: ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears. And Donald Trump has successfully persuaded huge swathes of America to ignore the evidence of their eyes and ears now for one term and 1 year, while in the UK, various combinations of oligarch-owned media and pliant politicians and client journalists have persuaded us, the public, to ignore the evidence of our own eyes and ears and put Boris Johnson in Downing Street, or vote for Brexit, or put Nigel Farage at the top of the opinion polls, all of which can only be done by a population that has been successfully persuaded to ignore the evidence of their own eyes and ears. Hey, if I told you that Farage is off to Mar-a-Lago for dinner tonight, would you believe me? In an attempt to undermine the sovereign UK government by cozying up to a foreign leader who looks increasingly sympathetic towards dictatorial ideas and policies. Would you believe me? Would you? Simon Marks will be with us at 11:45 to tell us a little. Yes, we are, to answer Seema's question. Simon Marks will be with us at 11:45 to answer a few more questions, or indeed to share a few more details about what's going on. But before we get stuck into the question of why it's not working, I just want to address something. I find the Iranian regime repellent. Absolutely repellent. And I have picked up on one of the other tactics that the people who are wrong about everything deploy, which is, if you point out that the war being undertaken by Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu is probably illegal and certainly devoid of a lawful basis or a viable thought-through plan — how do we know that there's no viable thought-through plan? Because they keep telling us — then if you're part of the mutton-headed regiment, what you do is then accuse people who are pointing out that this is a ridiculous adventure of loving the Iranian regime. I don't know if you've come across this, but I mean, it happened a little bit in Brexit. Why do you love the European Union so much? You sort of say, well, I don't love the European Union. That would be weird. I just believe in the obvious benefits of single market membership or collective negotiation or whatever it may be. Human rights. Why do you love human rights so much? Oh, that's easy. I'm a human. But what you do, if you're an idiot, is that you accuse people who are pointing out why something shouldn't be happening of loving the people that it's happening to. So you point out why undertaking a war with a ridiculous absence of both lawful basis and viable thought-through plan — you phone me up to tell me why you're against this war, and I say to you, why do you love the Ayatollah so much? Right? That's how it works. That's how you do it. You think I'm exaggerating? I swear to you I'm not. That's how it works. You ring me and say, I think it would be better to obey international law and at least to have a viable thought-through plan. And maybe if we are going to go to war in the Middle East again, we should be cognizant of the lessons of Iraq and not do it under the leadership of an absolute muppet. And I say to you, oh, yeah, why do you love the Ayatollah so much? And then I'd sort of... Well, I'd probably give myself a little round of applause for being so brilliant. I don't think we should be undertaking a war with no lawful basis or viable thought-through plan. International law is really important. Why do you love the Ayatollah so much? That you think I'm exact? That's how it works. It's the equivalent of, for example, if you were to say, if I were to say to you, I don't think your idea about castrating paedophiles with a rusty spoon in the middle of the dairy aisle in Tesco is a very good idea. And you would say to me, why do you love paedophiles so much? That's the same logic. It's the same rhetoric. And it is, I think, baked into about 80% of the corporate media in this country. Let's try, let's do what we can. Let's acknowledge the hideousness of the Iranian regime. But let's not abandon our values, our respect for law and the international order at the altar of wanting to get rid of the hideous Iranian regime. Why do you love the Ayatollah so much? Well, part of the reason why I'm repelled by the Iranian regime is because of the way that it tries to marry religion to totalitarianism. The way that it tries to pretend that it is justified in doing disgusting things because of their direct line to God or their special relationship with God. So how come you can treat your own population with such hideous impunity and cruelty? Answer, well, because I'm doing God's work. I'm on a mission from God. That's one of the reasons why I find the Iranian regime repellent. This is what happened in the Oval Office yesterday.
We are honored to come before your presence today, lifting up the arms of our president. We pray for your continued blessing and favor to rest upon him. We pray for wisdom from heaven to flood his heart, his mind, and Lord, you will guide him in these challenging times that we're facing today. I pray for your grace and your protection over him. I pray for your grace and protection over our troops and all of our men and women serving in our armed forces. And Father, we just pray you'll continue to give our president
The evangelical leaders and the footage, the pictures are, I mean, they are as hideous as the ones that you would see if we had cameras in the Ayatollah's office, putting their hands over Donald Trump, essentially saying, we are giving you God's agency, God is passing through you. That's in the Oval Office as they prayed over him and sort of anointed him as some sort of messenger or messianic figure for US success in the war against Iran. That's one of the reasons why I find the Iranian regime repellent, because they claim that the Ayatollah is imbued with the divine right to do everything that he does. So what's the difference between what these evangelical Christians are doing in the Oval Office and what the Ayatollah and his cronies believe justifies their abuses of their own people? They are both identical in concept. How on earth do you justify doing these disgusting things? Oh, I'm doing God's work.
We are honored to come before your presence today, lifting up the arms of our president. We pray for your continued blessing and favor to rest upon him. We pray for wisdom from heaven to flood his heart, his mind, and Lord, you will guide him in these challenging times.
And while we're in the clip folder, that headline from the Times today about Iranian refugees already making their way to Britain in small boats. If you're wondering what the Trump regime is doing, planning or thinking about refugees, don't worry, Pete Hegseth has got you covered.
One common outcome of American military action in the past has been taking in thousands of refugees into the American homeland, and I'm wondering if there's any safeguards put in place to make sure that the American people aren't having to have another wave of refugees from the Middle East or anywhere else come and stay here.
I think it's safe to say there's no plan for a wave of new Middle Eastern refugees to the United States of America. I think, as the president has pointed out for a long time, there are a lot of countries in this in the region who would be capable of providing that kind of support if need be, but that's certainly not something we're planning on.
Oh, that's all right then. That's great, because that, of course, will keep the far right in rhetoric for another 20 years or so. So let's go and bomb another Middle Eastern country, generate an exodus of human souls away from the places that we're turning into hellholes on Earth. And then all of our friends in the far-right European countries who will bear the brunt of the refugee crisis can pretend that all the problems in the world are caused by the refugees. And they will be leading in the opinion polls by tea time. Speaking of opinion polls, the number of Britons who believed that Israel's continued military operations in Gaza were not justified, and it hasn't been polled relatively recently, but if you went back to the last time it was, you're looking at 57% of the population don't believe there's any justification for what is going on and has gone on there. And the number of people who saw those attacks as justified fell to 18%. So there's a parallel here. You look at the UK media and you would think that the public was four square behind Benjamin Netanyahu's genocide. But you look at public opinion, you look at public polling, and you can conclude categorically that it isn't. You look at the UK media, you could be forgiven for thinking that the UK public was four square behind Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's war in Iran. But you look at the polling and it isn't. And that's what I want to know. I want to know why this is not working. And I want you to tell me on, I sounded like that song then, Foreigner. I want to know what love is. I want to know what love is, and I want you to tell me. 0345-6060-973. I want to know why it's not working. Is international politics different from domestic? So they can get you to vote for a delinquent, a depraved delinquent like Boris Johnson. And they can get you to vote to become the first population in the history of humanity to impose economic sanctions on itself. They can get you to vote for austerity because the global financial crisis of 2008 wasn't caused by bankers enriching themselves. It was caused by there being too many sure start centres in Shepherd's Bush. And they can at least persuade you to give Liz Truss a chance. But they can't persuade you that bombing human beings all the way back to peace is a viable. I don't know. Why isn't it working? Why isn't it working? These topics are far too serious for Idiot's Corner, but I'll read a message from Nick. He says, how many times are you going to say genocide? You are a disgrace, O'Brien. Well, I'm not really keeping count, Nick, but I can tell you that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, according to many Israel based human rights groups. I can tell you that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, according to the world's leading experts. A plurality of genocide scholars cited, among other elements, Israel's attacks on Gaza's healthcare, Gaza's aid, Gaza's educational sectors. I can tell you that Israel has committed genocide in the Gaza Strip, according to the UN Commission. So I don't know. Why would you object to the use of that word when it is being used by the UN Commission, by human rights organisations in Israel itself, as well as the rest of the world, and indeed by a plurality of actual genocide scholars? Answer, Nick can't understand why the messages that are being propagandized by corporate media in this country aren't swaying the public. How can someone be allowed on the radio to tell the truth about the UN Commission, about Israel-based human rights groups, about the world's leading experts? How can that be allowed to happen? How can the public not be falling for the rhetoric surrounding the Iran war? And that's the question. Why isn't it working? You'd be blooming furious, wouldn't you, if you were a billionaire trying to control the news agenda, getting your Brexit over the line, getting Boris Johnson in. Cryptocurrency is the next big one, by the way. Come here a minute. You want to write this down. If people are giving money to a political party when their fortunes are built upon cryptocurrency, they are doing it because they've seen how much money Trump's cronies have made from cryptocurrency flogging and deregulating in the United States of America, and they're desperate for the same thing to happen here. So if you've got a bunch of money and no morals, give it to a politician who you think is most likely to allow cryptocurrency to continue to be the mother of all Ponzi schemes. All right? Have you written that down? All right, come back to me. Say thank you when I'm proved right. But what I don't understand, and my phone-ins are always more fun when I don't understand things, I don't understand why it's not working. 0345-6060-973. Here's the Spectator magazine. Here's the Daily Mail. Here's Kemi Badenoch. Here's Nigel Farage. Here's the Daily Telegraph. Here's the Daily Express. Here's Rupert Murdoch. Here they all are. All of the people with all of the power when it comes to defining and determining public discourse in this country. Some bloke set up an entire TV station because he didn't think the media in this country was right-wing enough. So I presume, and I haven't checked, but you will correct me if I'm wrong, that GBBs is 100% behind the idea that we should all have gone into war without a lawful basis or a viable thought-through plan. All of them. All of them. War, war, war. Forget about Iraq. Forget about Donald Trump's obvious depravity. Forget about genocide. War, more, war, more, 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 war. And it's not working, and I don't know why. I don't know why. But you might. 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Rob, he's in the supermarket when his phone bleeps. It's his daughter. She's in Manchester, at uni. The message is short. She's happy. And just like that, Rob knows every penny he invested and saved was worth it. He texts her back, heart emoji. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Rob's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Sunday Leaguers! Dog lovers! Bait clubbers! Banger dancers! Baby ravers! Potters!
Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event, distance and participant age.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
20 minutes after 11 is the time. I think while we just get the switchboard marshalled and the first calls ready on the question of why it's not working, the enormous effort, the massed ranks of the mass media all shouting for more war in the Middle East. They all told us that Iraq would be a cakewalk, of course, but they don't like to talk about that. They're adamant that Keir Starmer is getting it all wrong on Iran, despite the fact that the British public is behind him on an extraordinary level, according to the latest polling. But, in fact, have a listen to a little clip from Question Time last night, because I just think it illustrates, in case you think I'm going mad, if you are confined to your Uncle Keith's Facebook page and the Daily Mail website, you will not know what's going on in the world. And Question Time has been a very, very flawed platform in recent years. In fact, if I were Zach Polanski, I'd be on at the BBC already asking, what was that algorithm you used to decide that Nigel Farage and his mates deserved a season ticket on all the BBC programmes? Do you remember? Was it because they were doing well in the opinion polls? Or because they'd won the most recent by-election? So you completely ignored parliamentary arithmetic or the results of the last general election and gave red carpet treatment to Farage and his mates on BBC programmes all the time? Because whatever algorithm it was that you used, whatever formula it was that you used, whatever justification you used over at the BBC to give Reform more coverage than they could have dreamt of in their wildest, I'm afraid it now applies to the Greens. Robbie Gibb, anybody? Anybody get him on the phone? Sits on the board constantly accusing journalists trying to actually do proper journalism of being biased or unbalanced. He was a massive Brexit supporter, went to work for Theresa May, got a knighthood for his troubles. But he's a masterpiece of impartiality and unbiasedness. Why would the Greens not get exactly the same treatment that Farage has been getting for years now that they're smashing the opinion polls and indeed the by-elections? There's a question for you to ponder on. But anyway, Question Time last night, I quite liked.
It very much feels like the press in general seems, especially the right-wing press, is out of touch with the general public on this issue, especially papers like The Telegraph being very much war hawks. Yet if you look at the polling, the majority of the British public does not want us to go to war in Iran. And furthermore, we are presented as an outlier. Oh, Britain, look at Keir Starmer, look at him being weak. one of our biggest allies, Spain, they're refusing to take part and Trump's threatened to embargo them. So are we less, you know, not going to war, and are we more standing up to a bully?
Is that part of it, do you think? Why isn't it working? Because people can see clearly what is actually happening in front of them, rather than the pictures distorted by the lens of deeply corrupt client journalists and client journalism. I don't know. But I want to hear what you think on 0345 6060 973. Liz is in Shepparton. Liz, what would you like to say?
Oh, yeah, hi there.
Hello there.
I wanted to say, I think currently Trump is absolutely not resonating in any way with the British values, with people in Britain. We find him so repulsive, not necessarily because of the war thing, because of who he is.
How dare you? Dick Littlejohn wants him to be in charge of this country instead of the man that we elected.
Even he must find that difficult to say.
Don't
be purely silly. Because, I mean, he seems to have upset us as British, but I'm trying to think of we have certain values as British people. We are respectful. We like to think we're polite. We don't make a fuss. All the things that Trump isn't. So when we watched him in the Oval Office with Zelensky, we felt visceral disgust.
Yes.
Well,
to be fair, Dick by name Littlejohn didn't. He loved all that stuff.
Wow. I mean, you know, and he gets this big platform. He does not represent British people. And British people, even the reform voters, I think Farage has put himself with Trump, and that is going to be the fall of reform. I don't even think reform voters can deal with his friendship.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I mean, it's obviously fair to say that if Nigel Farage was any further up Donald Trump's fundament, it'd be falling out of his nostrils. But he's flying there tonight.
I think that's the undoing of him. I genuinely think that even the veterans, even the reform people who were into, you know, I'm an army veteran and I believe in the UK, and then he insulted the veterans and they're like, whoa,
hang on.
He
insulted the dead. He insulted 454 dead British military personnel by claiming that we hadn't really pulled our weight in
He's repulsive.
Afghanistan.
He's repulsive to everyone.
He's not repulsive to everyone. I have to draw you up on that. I have colleagues who think that he's wonderful. Between you and me, Liz, and don't tell anyone, they're the same people that thought Boris Johnson was wonderful, Brexit was wonderful, Liz Truss was wonderful, and austerity was wonderful. They're the same people that don't believe poverty exists until they try to introduce school fees on VAT on school fees. If people can't afford to feed their own children, that's all lies, and it's because they're spending it all on flat-screen TVs and Benson and Hedges. But if you can't afford the VAT on school fees, then it's time to man the barricades and have a revolution. So some people do love Trump. But we know why.
Is that people with no empathy? Are there some people born with not an empathetic bone in their body?
I don't know. I think some people will abandon empathy if the price is right, and some people don't have any at all. And some people, remember, just love the racism, the misogyny, and the climate change denial.
And the climate change denial.
So let's just have a look at Dick Littlejohn's column today. Because people think sometimes when I say the climate change denial goes hand in hand with the racism and the misogyny, they think I'm exaggerating or that I've got it wrong. But here it is, a column about why Britain is wrong or why he's so ashamed. And he says, instead of drill baby drill and frack baby frack, which could go a long way towards meeting our energy needs, both ignorant and idiotic, but proof positive that when you're looking at why anybody would support Donald Trump, it is either or all of the following. It is the racism, it is the sexism, and it is the climate change denial, the misogyny. And of course, I mean, the transgender stuff plays a part in this as well. Dick Littlejohn, as far as I'm aware, the only columnist who's ever been cited by a coroner at an inquest into a suicide as having written things that added to the mental turmoil of the person whose case was being considered. What an extraordinary badge to carry through your career, eh? I think I'm the only columnist that's ever been cited by a coroner at an inquest into a suicide of somebody that I'd attacked in print. But hey-ho, on we go, up with British values. 27 minutes after 11 is the time. Why, Sam, in Woking, is it not working?
Hi, James.
Hello.
So I think that the main reason why it's not working and people are not convinced is because of social media. So it's no longer the years in early 2000 where people relied on mainstream media to tell them what's happening and to make an opinion just based on that. So nowadays people are posting stuff on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook. People know what's happening on the ground. So I was born in Lebanon.
Okay.
I spent my early years in Lebanon. It's a lovely country, great people. And during those years, I was always wondering, like, in 1996, Lebanon was attacked by Israel. There was the Cana massacre. 200 people died at a UN post when they were bombed. And in the news that night, on CNN, on BBC, everything, I remember vividly that they weren't mentioned. It wasn't that important. Instead, what was mentioned were the Katyusha rockets that landed somewhere in the fields in northern Israel, and no one got hurt, and how people rushed to
I'm sure they'd both been met. I mean, I don't want to argue with you about something I can't remember.
It's not arguing. It's just that I'm just trying to point out to the fact that in the past, it used to be there will be an imbalance, whereas now that imbalance, even though it's still going on GB News, even on BBC, but people have other sources of information that they can log into. So I think that's why people are not convinced. No one can feed you the narrative that there's weapons of mass destruction like the Iraq War, and we need to go in there.
When you can see there aren't. Here's an interesting thing. So in terms of social media is a cancer on public discourse when it is opinion cloaked as fact, or when it is lies cloaked as fact, or when it is just a bile duct for people to void their hatreds and their bigotries. But when it actually comes to what we would once have described as journalism, then footage that comes out of places that, in the case of Gaza, of course, journalists often can't get into. Israel won't let Western journalists into Gaza, but people, because of technology, can still get footage out. It becomes harder and harder to sustain some of these positions, and the public are simultaneously subjected to the hideous online propaganda. I mean, the hatred for Keir Starmer is almost up there with Sadiq Khan. All that's missing is the racism. But they can see what's happening in parts of the world where once they wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah, and people can be reminded about the stuff. Like, Donald Trump just 2 months ago said that he destroyed the whole program, that it would take them 5-6 years to build it up again. And people are reminded on that, because we can always play the clips. People can remind you of what was said. It's not something that can be ignored anymore. And just one last thing, like, we all saw the school that's been hit in Iran with over 100 casualties among young girls.
Yes.
That would never have ended up, like, if that had happened by a bullet, just imagine, James, a ballistic Iranian missile hitting a school in Israel or in the Gulf or anywhere. That would be on the news 24/7. We would hear about the names of every girl in that school, about what they did, what they went, where they lived, how they had dreams, how they had aspirations. But none of that is on the news.
Well, that's partly because it's impossible to get into Iran, and that is a decision not of a neighbouring enemy state, but of the Iranian regime itself. But I take your central point. While I have you, given that you're from Lebanon, I presume you still have family there, Sam.
Yeah. I'm from the Mount Lebanon area, so it's the Christian part of Lebanon. So Lebanon is only now suffering attacks in the south of the country, in the valley of the Bekaa, the east of the country, and in the southern suburbs of Beirut. So where my family are, it's pretty safe, but it's still not ideal, because we've got over 1 million people in Lebanon now displaced. Like, the Israeli army just yesterday issued the command for all the southern suburb of Beirut, more than 250,000 people, to just get their stuff and leave in 3 hours before they bombed the place. 20 strikes yesterday on the southern suburb of Beirut called Dahiyeh.
Yes.
And split, like, more than 25 high-rise buildings have been flattened out. Like, no one mentions that. It's like a line on the BBC saying Beirut's being attacked, and that's it.
Well, we can test this now. I genuinely want people to respond with that. Well, it's not going to be scientific. And of course, some people will know. But I wonder, Sam, how many people listening to this program now on a current affairs station are aware that 500,000 people have been ordered by the Israeli military to evacuate their homes in Lebanon in the last 24 hours. 500,000 people ordered by the Israeli military to leave the area where they live, to literally pack up and just go in the last 24 hours. I wonder how many people, even listening to a radio station like this, because I'm afraid I haven't mentioned that until you came on the phone. It had It's on my list. I'd have got around to it eventually. I probably should have got to it sooner. But I wonder how many people listening even to the... I mean, certainly nobody reading the Daily Mail is going to be aware of it, or reading Dick Surely by name not. Little John's column today. But even people who think they're paying attention will be unaware of that. But if you're plugged into the right bits of social media, and this is the central point you're making so well, then you'd know about it.
Exactly.
Thank you, Sam. And I hope your family stay safe, you know. 500,000 people. But before we go to the news, and I know I'm a little bit late, just imagine now, just do this for me, okay? Can you evacuate your home now, please? Can you just go now? Right now? Grab the kids. Where are they? You have to evacuate your home because we're about to start bombing it. So, everyone's talking about Iran and why Keir Starmer should be getting involved in that and backing up Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump. Benjamin Netanyahu, meanwhile, is telling 500,000 residents of Beirut to just go. And that's what you need to do to understand this. You need to now just imagine you had to evacuate your home now. Where would you go? What would you take? Who would you phone? Where would you be? Just do it, please. Go now. Evacuate. 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 And a plurality of the corporate media in this country, almost all of the columnists and the commentators, they think that Keir Starmer should have attached us to the side of the people giving the orders. It's not even in Iran. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, has declined to rule out UK offensive action in the Iran war. The government's current position is that British bases can only be used in a defensive capacity. Opposition politicians have criticised Keir Starmer for dithering over the conflict after initially blocking America from using the military sites. David Lammy's also told LBC that more planes are heading to the Middle East to help Britons who want to leave. After a 24-hour delay, the first UK government chartered flight arrived in London from Oman this morning. The United States and Israel say they're moving into a new phase of their war on Iran. Israel has carried out further strikes on the Iranian capital Tehran overnight, as well as on Beirut in Lebanon. One other story, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. They're accused of spying on locations and people linked to the Jewish community in London. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC. Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
AO members get 10% off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Hotpoint, Beko and Hoover. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at £39.99.
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
When the business hustle is on, when the boardroom drama hots up, when sales pitches really deliver results, or don't. All that, and they made £3.
£3 and 13 pence.
Oh yeah, that'll save them.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can keep up with all the latest boardroom battles. Search TV licence together.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 11:37. I mean, there are so many elements to the conversation that we're having, the broader conversation. I suggested at 12 o'clock yesterday that this might be one of those weeks where we go monotopical, with the exception, the glorious exception of Mystery Hour. I think every hour of this show this week has been about the escalating situation in the Middle East. And some of the most powerful contributions are the ones about what might happen next. Taken back to General David Petraeus saying, tell me how this ends, when he led the so-called surge in Iraq, and to Colin Powell's observation that you need to have a clear political objective. And Keir Starmer joining those hallowed ranks this week when he pointed out the necessity of a lawful basis and a viable thought-through plan. But among the things that worried me most was the explanation we received yesterday from Balama Bukati about the caliphate nature of the Iranian regime and the likelihood of terror being exported as a consequence of war, which is why the story in the news today about four people being arrested in this country on suspicion of assisting Iran's intelligence services is potentially so important and so interesting. It may be that they're not related at all, or that nothing will come of it, but I thought we should find out as much as we possibly could about what's been going on that front, which is why Joe Draper is here with the latest.
Well, yes, overnight, James, four men arrested on suspicion of spying for Iran, specifically on the Jewish community here in London. One Iranian man, three dual British Iranian nationals. The Metropolitan Police telling us the men were arrested at addresses in Harrow, Watford and Barnet, so north London, early this morning around 1 a.m. Officers reportedly acting on a tip-off from a member of the Jewish community there who was worried about the alleged activities of these men. Six others, we're told, have been arrested on suspicion of assisting an offender in Harrow, and we know multiple properties are being searched by police today. As I say, no charges have yet been brought. This is an active case, but likely, I'm sure, to raise concerns about potential Iranian influence here in the UK, how this ongoing war in the Gulf could impact our security. We know the regime has terror cells operating across Europe. The government clearly is concerned about this. The Prime Minister, in his address about the war on Saturday, repeating that figure that MI5 had foiled 20 Iranian-linked terror plots in 2025 alone. And here's MI5's Director General Ken McCullum talking about that threat in October.
Iran's autocratic regime is likewise frantically trying to silence its opponents around the world, including in the UK. 2025 has required us to grow our counter-Iran effort once again. MI5 has tracked more than 20 potentially lethal Iran-backed plots in just the 1 year since I last stood at this podium. The UK was among the first to call out this wave of Iranian transnational aggression, but we're far from alone.
And the UK's former head of counter-terror policing, Neil Basu, was talking on the Crime Agents podcast earlier this week, giving us an insight into how serious some of those plots were.
Those attacks are what they call late-stage attack planning, where life is in danger. It is quite an astonishing figure, and I hadn't really registered just how serious it was until we've entered this, what can only be described as the foothills of a potential World War III.
And of course, that threat, James, could well get worse now, especially if Iran sees us as co-belligerents. We know we are now allowing the Americans to use some of our bases to launch assaults against Iranian missile facilities. They could well then see us as co-belligerents in this war. Counter-terror policing, we're told, are working on overdrive at the moment. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, this week acknowledging that the threat from the Middle East could spill over into the UK streets. And she was writing on X today, responding to that arrest, those arrests this morning, saying that police and intelligence services will not hesitate to act on any threats to the UK. The terror threat level, James, is currently set at severe. That's the second most serious. It's been that level for several years now already. But the Defence Secretary, John Healey, speaking to reporters this week, said that it was now absolutely under review.
When you get a regime like this lashing out in the Middle East indiscriminately and widely, hitting civilian as well as military targets, when you have some of its proxies capable of other actions on their behalf, then of course Our force protection in the region is at its highest. Our alert and our vigilance in the UK is also high.
And James, we've seen this before, haven't we? The first Gulf War was, you know, seen by bin Laden as a huge motivating factor in his later terror activities. The Syrian civil war, that led obviously to the rise of ISIS. Several pretty horrific terror attacks here in London and across the UK. So Western intervention has consistently created instability in the Middle East, which often can spread across the globe. Security services here very concerned about that, but they say they're doing everything they can to keep people safe.
Indeed. I mean, what are the odds on Nigel Farage coming forward to talk about the dangers of poking the Iranian bear, I wonder, Joe? So this is very much a watching brief now. I mean, one hopes... Well, one doesn't really know what to hope, but the idea of Iranian operatives, which, of course, dissidents will tell you about as well, but people, critics of the Iranian regime based here will be able to give you quite a lot of information on the infiltration or the presence of agents in this country, but we'll watch this with great interest. Thank you, Joe. A timely moment to remember, of course, that thing I mentioned to you earlier, that will happen more and more as this situation unfolds, and it is if you are to support the notion of international law or the support of a viable thought-through plan or the importance of a political objective, as Colin Powell put it, then idiots will say, why do you love the Ayatollahs so much? So when things like this start happening, it is yet more evidence of how repellent the Iranian regime may be, because this is only at investigation stage. The Iranian regime is repellent for a whole heap of reasons, but it does not ever breach the necessity of viable thought-through plans, lawful bases, international law, and a proper concept of political objective and what the end game is supposed to be. So if you ever hear anybody or read anybody accusing people who are opposed to illegal wars of somehow loving the targets of the illegal wars, then you are listening to an idiot. It is 11:45. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thank you, Joe Draper. Simon Marks is next.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I can't say that I disagree with the Prime Minister. That there was no real plan, I think, is probably a good reason for Keir Starmer not to have got involved with the initial assault. Because I haven't heard from the Americans that there is a plan here for regional stability that means that, if we're going to be very selfish about it, you're not going to see your energy bill rise by 10% in the next few months, or your car be fueled by petrol that is going to cost an absolute fortune.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Aye, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now.
Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our first drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search First Drive Weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 11:47. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Before we speak to one of the best, we can just quickly reflect upon what I was saying a moment ago. I wasn't suggesting for a moment that no one was reporting the evacuation of 500,000 people from Lebanon on the orders of the Israel Defense Forces. I was simply because Lindsay Hulsom on Channel 4 News last night did a brilliant job. The Guardian is reporting it. It's mentioned on LBC. But if you were relying upon cheerleaders for more war, if you were relying upon apologists for Donald Trump or Benjamin Netanyahu, outlets, platforms, individuals, commentators, pundits, broadcasters who can't tell you why they want more war but can tell you adamantly that they do, then you probably wouldn't have heard about the events on the Lebanese border, the border between Lebanon and Israel and beyond, and the evacuation of 500,000 people. If you do anything, if you take anything away from today's programme, take away the question of what would you do if you got told now to evacuate your home, right now. 11:48 is the time. Simon Marks is in Washington, D.C. Where do you want to start, Simon?
I think we should probably start, James, with some of the very, very mixed messaging that is continuing to come out of the White House on a whole array of different areas relating to this conflict, all of which underscores there is no plan and possibly underscores the fact that at the beginning of this conflict, there may not have been an adequate plan. I'm referring to investigations that have been conducted now by the news agency Reuters and by other news organizations that are concluding that the United States absolutely was responsible for the missile strike on that girls' school in Minab in Iran that killed at least 170 people. For the last two or three days, the White House has been refusing to comment on exactly what happened there, saying it was all subject to a Pentagon investigation, and until the Pentagon told us what had happened, they couldn't possibly say that the United States may have been involved in it. Not only now is there a growing body of evidence to suggest that indeed it was an American missile that slammed into that girl's school, but there are also now questions about whether AI may in any way have been used in targeting that particular missile. We know that AI is being extensively used by the American military and is allowing them reportedly to come up with targets with a greater degree of rapidity than they would be able to if they were simply using human beings to engage in battlefield planning. But I think there are real questions now about whether the United States was responsible for that. They, of course, insist that this was not, even if they were involved, it wasn't deliberate. They insist here that they don't deliberately target civilians. But there are questions now about the AI involvement in all of this, as well, of course, about where all of this is heading. President Trump actually said last night on the telephone to reporter John Carl from ABC News, and he's been doing another raft of these telephone interviews all day long with individual reporters, and then everybody scrambles to find out what he said to each person that he's spoken to, and then you invariably discover that he said one thing to one person and something different to another. But to John Carl of ABC last night, when he was asked what the plan is for what happens next in Iran after this first, major combat operation wraps up, the quote from President Trump to John Carl is, "Forget about next. I mean, you know, as though you don't have to worry about next. This, the president indicated, is simply all about degrading Iran's nuclear and ballistic missile capability so that he doesn't have to go back in there again, or a successor of his doesn't have to go back in there again in 5 or 10 years' time. Suddenly last night, as he was welcoming Lionel Messi and the Inter Miami football team to the White House, and they were all behind him, this bizarre pastiche of, you know, soccer players from Miami, including Lionel Messi, behind him in the White House. He updated the American public about the war before he dealt with their presence at the White House, and made an extraordinary plea to Iran's diplomats around the world. Let's listen to President Trump at the White House last night.
We also urge Iranian diplomats around the world to request asylum and to help us shape a new and better Iran with great potential. It's a country with great potential. It's a much better future for Iran. It's now beginning. It's going to be, I think, a great future.
It's going to be a great future. He wants Iranian diplomats to seek asylum, presumably in whichever country they find themselves, and help him to build a new Iran. And there were other moments yesterday where, in telephone interviews with reporters, he again hinted that he's willing in some fashion to work with the regime, albeit not with the son of the late supreme leader, who's being tipped to become the next supreme leader. The president dismissed him as a lightweight, although couldn't name Mojtaba Khamenei in any of the conversations that he appeared to have. But he also once again cited the Venezuelan example and paid tribute to a woman that he referred to as President-elect Delcy Rodriguez, except, of course,
there's been no
she
election.
Is president. Elect. No. So in no way can she be described in those terms. But he once again almost seemed to be musing about the possibility of finding someone from within the regime that he might then seek to prop up, as he did with Maduro's number two and the rest of the Venezuelan government back in January.
I don't think we need to worry too much, though, because he's doing God's work.
Yes. So we talked last time we spoke on the programme, I forget which day it was, James, about the role that the Military Religious Freedom Foundation has been playing in monitoring what would be unconstitutional religious and faith-based Christian nationalist instructions and pep talks that are being given to troops in the region, many of which are complaining to this Military Religious Freedom Foundation and arguing that their commanding officers are breaching the constitutional separation between church and state. But there have been more incidents where the White House and its supporters are not even obscuring the extent to which Christian nationalism is fueling their determination to make change in Iran. Yesterday at the White House, surrounding the president at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, were a group of pastors, including the head of the White House Faith Office, a woman called Paula White Kane, who on occasion has been known to speak in tongues. And one of those pastors led this prayer, this blessing for the President of the United States.
I pray for your grace and your protection over him.
Yes.
I pray for your grace and protection over our troops and all of our men and women serving in our armed forces.
Yes.
And Father, we just pray you'll continue to give our president the strength that he needs to lead our great nation as we come back to one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We pray your heavenly blessing upon him in Jesus' name.
Amen.
I'll ask you some questions about that in a moment, but she's not the only one who speaks in tongues, of course, Simon.
Finally, we honor one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a really terror.
So I thought he was just chatting gibberish there, but maybe he was also speaking in tongues. He was a vessel for the Holy Spirit, and those words are words that we won't actually understand the full meaning of until the second coming. Will anybody anywhere be aware of the irony of attacking religious fundamentalists while also sucking up to religious fundamentalists?
Well, it is a wannabe theocracy trying to dislodge a theocracy. I mean, it's clear that that is part of the motivation here. And we heard it from the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, who was talking to reporters yesterday and trying to provide the administration with more support for their claim that Iran posed an imminent national security threat to the United States.
They say the quiet part's out loud. They wanted to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, and they'd like to take us out as well. We're the great Satan in their analogy and their misguided religion, and there was no way to appease them.
It's a misguided religion, and they're the ones, the Iranians, who are saying the quiet stuff out loud, according to a Speaker of the House of Representatives yesterday.
That's incredible.
Who was very much saying the quiet stuff out loud. And remember, as we told everybody earlier this week, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth has also spoken of praying for the biblical vision to win this conflict. And you know, while all of that may play fabulously here in the United States with his Christian evangelical and Christian nationalist base, even he is conceding that the messaging that is coming from his government, coupled with the brute force that is being unleashed by the United States and the Israeli militaries on targets in Iran and Lebanon, is putting America itself, the American homeland, at a greater risk of terrorism. He said, was asked yesterday by one of those reporters who interviewed him whether he was concerned about the possibility of terrorist attacks on America, and he said there will be deaths. There will be terror deaths in America, but that's war. So the messaging that is going on here in terms of projecting that Christian nationalism outside the country, but also saying to a country in which 60% of people tell pollsters they oppose this war, is that you've got to hang on here. We're winning it. We can't tell you how long it's going to go on for. We have no idea what the outcome is going to be in terms of Iran's future governing arrangements. Oh, and by the way, there could well be acts of terrorism on American soil as a result of this.
And on we go. And he came perilously close in an interview with Time magazine to channeling Lord Farquaad from the Shrek films, who of course said, some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice I'm willing to make. And Donald Trump said last night, like I said, some people will die. When you go to war, some people will die. At the Secretary for Homeland Security, who is it now at the moment?
Well, it's still the woman referred to disparagingly here as Ice Barbie, Kristi Noem, who was fired yesterday by President Donald Trump, but she remains in office, everybody says, until the end of this month. His successor is Senator Mark Wayne McMullen of Oklahoma, a former martial arts fighter, mixed martial arts fighter, who at one point, Senator Bernie Sanders had to intervene to prevent the senator from Oklahoma engaging in a fist fight during a Senate committee hearing where he was having a bit of a contretemps with a union leader here in the United States. Mark Wayne McMullen's got to go through confirmation hearings. So this idea that, you know, he takes over on April the 1st, April Fool's Day, is itself a bit of a fool's errand, because the chances of him having been confirmed by then, I think, are questionable.
Oh, wow. What else do we know about him, apart from his fisticuffs or his and his past as a martial arts fighter? Is he a complete left field candidate? I mean, what a stupid question. Yeah, I was thinking then, it's almost like I'd jumped in a DeLorean sports car and woken up 5 years ago. I was thinking then that there'd have been some sort of recognisable process here, or there would have been people who were presenting themselves as candidates for this job because of their track records or their history or their long careers in areas aligned with Homeland Security. Sorry, Simon, what a stupid question.
No. Absolutely not. I mean, Donald Trump found himself in a position where Kristi Noem, the woman who's played dress-up every time she's gone into the field in a bid to sort of be like a performing seal that attracts Donald Trump's attention and approval, has blotted her copybook because she went through congressional testimony this week. The whole city has been aware of rumours that she's been having an affair, allegedly, with her number two, prominent Trump bagman by the name of Corey Lewandowski. And she was questioned about this alleged affair, peppered with questions about it by Democrats on Capitol Hill this week, became a pastiche of herself. I mean, just lampooned herself during that congressional testimony. So Trump finally decided he had to get rid of her, needed a replacement, and thought, well, who better than a former mixed martial arts fighter to go out on the streets of America and push back against illegal immigrants?
I'm late for the news, but I just want to dig into that a little bit more. What would have broken the spell for Trump in what you've just described? Because, you know, they lie for him, they shill for him, they bend the knee for him, they sacrifice their integrity for him, such as any of them had, and in return, all they can ever hope for is that they hang on to their job. So what would have actually broken that deal from in this, but do you think?
I think in this case, it was Republicans in the Senate on Capitol Hill, not over the affair, by the way, the alleged affair, but over her description of Renee Good and Alex Pretty as domestic terrorists, the two American citizens gunned down in Minneapolis, when they all knew that was flatly untrue. So that was the original sin.
Right.
And then there may have been a more traditional sin that ultimately did her in.
There was some powerful interrogation on that specific question, wasn't there, which we may actually have a listen to in the next hour. But that she wasn't rogue. She didn't go rogue when she did that. Didn't she originally claim that Stephen Miller had told her to say that originally? But he's still there.
Correct. And if you put her and the then head of the Border Patrol, Greg Bovino, who, of course, has also been moved off into the hinterlands up side by side, and run their statements that day, they were both reading exactly the same prepared set of remarks that it is suggested emanated from Stephen Miller, safe in his position as Deputy White House Chief of Staff.
And finally, Simon, quite a lot of people want to know, and I'm not exaggerating, is Mark Wayne all one word?
It's all one word.
Thank you, Simon Marks. It's 12:04.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, has declined to rule out UK offensive action in the Iran war. The government's current position is that British bases can only be used in a defensive capacity. Opposition politicians have criticised Sir Keir Starmer in recent days for dithering after initially blocking America from using the military sites. Speaking to LBC this morning, Mr Lammy stressed there's a legal basis to carry out defensive strikes.
The truth is that at this time, there are ballistic missiles being directed at us, and we are able to defend ourselves legally. It is for those on the ground operationally to make the assessment of how, when, what, and why. But of course, the UK government and I, as Deputy Prime Minister, fully support them in that action.
Mr Lammy also told LBC that more planes are heading to the Middle East to help Britons who want to leave. After a 24-hour delay, the first UK government chartered flight arrived in London from Oman this morning. The US and Israel say they're moving into a new phase of their war on Iran. Israel has carried out further strikes on the Iranian capital Tehran overnight, as well as on Beirut in Lebanon. US Central Command says it's sunk around 30 Iranian ships, with Tehran's missile strikes down by 90%. Speaking last night, the US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth says access to the UK's base on Diego Garcia will help Washington intensify attacks.
It was unfortunate that the Brits didn't, from day one, say, hey, go ahead and have access. But we got there. And that's now part of the way that we're operationalizing bomber runs. And as part of when we say more to come, it's more fighter squadrons, it's more capabilities, it's more defensive capabilities.
In other news this lunchtime, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. The investigation relates to the suspected surveillance of locations and individuals linked to the Jewish community in London. The group were detained at addresses in Barnet and Watford by counter-terror officers earlier today. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 60 at 10,352. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain continuing for England and Wales, drier for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know, people ask me, what's my good place? It's in the garden, playing football with my girls. It's also knowing that because my pension is with PensionBee, I get a beekeeper, a UK-based account manager for support should I need it.
You're not very good, Daddy.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 12:07. Let me just take you back in time to... Initially, let me take you back in time to 2021, 28th of August specifically, when a man was flying one of the last RAF planes out of Kabul as his leadership of the UK's evacuation flights came to an end. A very interesting man, and a man who had also been in Iraq, serving in Iraq, and who is now an MP. Can you name him? Calvin Bailey is his name. He'll be with us at 12:30 today to cast an eye over more recent events. And while we're still in the past, I'd like to take you back to March of 2003, when an article that described the legal community as being deeply divided on the question of the legality of using force against Iraq in the absence of a further UN resolution was published in the Guardian newspaper. It's worth revisiting it. It's under the headline, "Sorry, Mr. Blair, but 1441 does not authorise force." And there's one line in it that I'd like to bring to your attention. "But military commanders on the ground will not thank the government if any action they take is later judged to have been in breach of international law." He also conceded that the idea of a prime minister ending up before the International Criminal Court for participating in a US-led attack is far-fetched. "But military commanders on the ground will not thank the government if any action they take is later judged to have been in breach of international law." And this rather insightful article ended with a single sentence: "Flawed advice does not make the unlawful use of force lawful." Who do you think wrote that? Do you want some clues? It was a barrister at Doughty Street Chambers specialising in international human rights law, also a fellow of the Human Rights Centre at Essex University. I don't know what happened to him, actually. I don't know why I'm reading this to you. He's called Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer. Writing that in 2003 about the imminent invasion of Iraq. So... it is to Keir Starmer. I'd like to redirect your attention now, I think. And the question of... And it's not something we do often on the programme, but these are not ordinary times. It's a question of what you think of him. And specifically, what you think of him this week. And specifically, lots of specifics. The question of whether or not Keir Starmer's conduct this week has changed your overall opinion of him. In many ways, I want to encourage you to ring in if the answer to that question is yes, more than I want to encourage you to ring in if the answer to that question is no. Because if you thought he was the best thing since sliced bread this time last week, and you still do, I don't know how interesting that is. Prove me wrong, please. I don't want to ever tell people they can't ring in, but prove me wrong. And similarly, if you thought Keir Starmer was the Antichrist last week and you still think he's the Antichrist now, then I don't know how interesting that will be. I can read Dick by Name Little John's column in the Daily Mail if I want to know what that gristle-brained perspective looks and sounds like. So I don't know. But I could be, as I say, prove me wrong. 03456060973. But what I want you to do is tell me why your position has actually changed, that with very specific and direct reference to the events of this week, up to and including the statement in Downing Street yesterday.
I know that people are worried sick about their family and friends who are caught up in this, about the impact on our lives and our economy, and about the potential for even greater escalation. They can hardly believe that yet again we're seeing missiles and drones falling and civilians in the firing line across the region. So I want to reassure the British public about the action that we're taking. While the region has been plunged into chaos, my focus is providing calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest. That means deploying our military and diplomatic strength to protect our people. And it means having the strength to stand firm by our values and our principles, no matter the pressure to do otherwise.
That's strong. I might play that to you again, actually. I like to jot down salient points when we're listening to clips together. Calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest. But also that final line there about no matter how much pressure to do otherwise. And that seems to me to be entirely of a piece with what we've been wanging on about for the last 2 hours. Well, you haven't been wanging on. You've been providing measured and insightful contributions. I've been doing a bit of wanging. I can't lie. But that point there about all of the pressure being brought to bear upon him. I'm not going to lie to you. I have dreamt of the day that a Labour leader would pursue a course that involved passionately ignoring the nonsense coming out of the corporate media. He still hasn't done it with Brexit. He's still slightly enthralled to the lies that the country fell for back in 2016. And I'm almost, will you indulge me for like 10 seconds? I'm quite pleased I've been quite critical of Keir Starmer recently because you can't accuse me of footballification. You know that I have been critical. That's the end of the 10 seconds. So when I tell you that I'm very pleased Keir Starmer is adopting this position, you know it's not coming from a place of thinking that everything he does is wonderful. Quite the opposite in recent months, for good or for ill. I've been honest with you. I always will be. So calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest, and no matter what pressure is brought to bear. Have another listen to it again, and then we'll not only address the question of what your pendulum has done, what has your Starmer pendulum done this week, but also the direct question, actually, has he provided calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest? I'd feel quite liberated to say, hell yes, he has. But have a listen again to this statement, and then we'll dig into it together.
I know that people are worried sick about their family and friends who are caught up in this, about the impact on our lives and our economy, and about the potential for even greater escalation. They can hardly believe that yet again we're seeing missiles and drones falling and civilians in the firing line across the region. So I want to reassure the British public about the action that we're taking. While the region has been plunged into chaos, my focus is providing calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest. That means deploying our military and diplomatic strength to protect our people. And it means having the strength to stand firm by our values and our principles, no matter the pressure to do otherwise.
It is 15 minutes after 12. The polling that Keir Starmer is recording at the moment is pretty dismal. I mean, prior to this Iranian issue, this Iranian war. But the leadership displayed there, I mean, some people have suggested to me it's almost becoming a Love Actually moment. It was Hugh Grant, wasn't it, in Love Actually, who played the Prime Minister and stood up to the American President in the final scenes and then ran off into the sunset with Martine McCutcheon. So while since I watched that film, apologies if I've misremembered it. And I've been a bit poo-poo-y on that in the past. I said, don't be ridiculous, this isn't Hollywood. He can only stand up so far to the American President. And I think in retrospect, I was probably wrong. He could have gone further in the past. It doesn't mean he should have done, but he could have gone further in the past. Diplomacy be damned. But here he is, promising to provide calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest. And here you are, telling me and everybody else listening whether or not you think he's succeeding. So what's happened to your Starmer pendulum this week? 0345 6060 973. And is he? In some ways, it's the same question, but not quite. Is he providing calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest? I don't think he's ever sounded more leadership, more leader-like. Leaderly? What's the word? Leaderly or leader-like? Leader-lo, leader-li, leader-loo. What is your view? And remember, it is going to be much, much more interesting if it's shifted. I don't quite see... Well, of course, it's perfectly possible that your opinion of him now is lower than... You're one of the 8% who think that we should have gone to war. But I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that you probably weren't his biggest fan in the first place. But if your pendulum has swung at all, I'd like you to tell me why and where. And, of course, whether or not he has succeeded in providing calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest. But don't forget, people like Kemi Badenoch are shouting, weak, 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 all the time. Weak, weak! Weak, weak, she shouts. But we are going to conduct a rather more intelligent discourse than she ever manages. Hopefully. Hopefully. Of course, that's all down to you.
This is LBC.
Imagine a breakfast wrap. You know the one. Because there really is only one. Sausage, egg, cheese, bacon and a potato rosti all wrapped together. Yep, there it is. I think my work here is done. Served until 11 a.m.
The hit Broadway and West End musical comedy Waitress comes to Woking this April. Starring West End leading lady Carrie Hope Fletcher and TV legend Les Dennis. Waitress is the story of a small town girl who's done taking orders and is looking for a fresh new start. With music by Grammy Award winner Sarah Bareilles, Waitress comes to the new Victoria Theatre from the 20th of April for 1 week only. Book your tickets today at atgtickets.com/woking.
A lot of legal decisions in this country are made by magistrates, volunteers, like you and me, working as a team to make decisions on cases in criminal or family courts with support from legal advisors. You don't need specific qualifications or experience. I'm an electrician myself, but you could be anything. A teacher, a delivery driver, unemployed. With ongoing support, you'll learn new skills, enjoy new challenges, and help create positive change for your community. Volunteer at icanbeamagistrate.co.uk.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
18 minutes after 12, Will's not happy. He says, your hook and tease disappointments should be rewarded by an electric shock administered by the producer. Actually, that would fall under Keith's remit, I think, if I was to receive small electric shocks whenever they wanted to punish me or chastise me for something. And you're quite right, Will. I've completely forgotten to tell you the tiny violin story. Do you know, I was thinking of launching a new feature called Tiny Violin Time, wherein we would regularly cover stories that demand the deployment of the tiniest violin in the world. I will do that. I will do that. I will not give Keith the power to administer a small electric shock to me whenever I forget to deliver the payoff on a so-called hook and tease. But he does deserve credit today because he just suggested that instead of talking about the Keir Starmer pendulum, we should call it the Starmometer. So how's your Starmometer? You can't give yourself a round of applause. That's outrageous. But who do you think you are? Me. So has your Starmometer gone up or gone down in the course of the last week, given the Prime Minister's handling of the American belligerence towards him, the Trump's belligerence towards him, the American and Israeli attacks upon Israel, and of course also Lebanon. Let us not forget that. And I want to know what you've done, whether you've changed, and indeed why. 0345 6060 973. Let's start with Cajun, who's in Wimbledon. Cajun, what would you like to say?
So, hi, James. Thanks Hello. For taking the call.
Hi, Cajun.
So, I'm one of those that I'm not committed to any political party. I see what they are saying and I vote accordingly.
It'll never catch on.
Yeah. And my politics, just to put that on the table, slightly left of centre. I believe in free education, free housing, and...
it'll never catch on.
Well, there should be a level of civilisation within a community, within a society.
I mean, these are my politics as well, actually, but yeah. That's by the by.
Yeah, but having said that, when Labour came in, I was optimistic purely because of the absolute travesty that the Tories have done to the country over the last 14 years with the idiots that we had.
You're not allowed to mention that. Kemi Badenoch said so.
Well, she's one of them.
You
can't,
no, you're not allowed to mention the 14, because everything that has happened that's bad since Keir Starmer became Prime Minister, or everything that happened that's in the country, every bad thing in the country is a consequence of what's happened since he became Prime Minister, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the 14 years of previous government. But carry on, I'm glad we've clarified that.
So, when Starmer came in, I was optimistic, and I rapidly lost faith in him, primarily because of the winter fuel allowance and then with the Mandelson situation. There's a caveat with the Mandelson situation in that if you've got the person we have across the pond, I can see where he was coming from on that.
Well, everyone could at the time. Private Eye did a roundup, and I meant to read it out on the show, actually, but inevitably I forgot. They did a roundup of what all the people attacking Keir Starmer a couple of weeks ago had said when the appointment of Peter Mandelson was actually made. And even by the standards of, you know, reverse ferrets, it was absolutely extraordinary. I'm surprised people didn't snap, Cajun. They were bending over so far backwards. But, OK, I understand your qualification. So today...
I think, I mean, I take my hat off to him. This week has been a stormer of a performance. To have this much pressure on him from all sides, and for him to have the guts and the integrity to do the right thing. I mean, what can you say about the man? And the other thing that I think we should bring up the next general election is, this week has highlighted the level of leadership competence across the board.
Yes, it has. That's very true, actually.
Yeah? Mm. So, these people that are saying that we should enter into an illegal war...
Probably illegal.
Well, in my opinion, it's illegal.
Okay.
I can't see any justification for it.
I think Jeffrey Robertson could yesterday in one paper, but that is kind of by the by at the moment.
Yeah, and when I say that, I am by no means a fan of Khamenei or the atrocities that they have done, but...
Thank you for qualifying that, because if I was a different type of radio presenter, I'd have to say, so what is it about the Ayatollah that you like so much, Cajun, at this point in the conversation? But happily, we're operating on a slightly higher plane than that, so...
No, but we cannot go around the world taking out people we don't like with military force.
Without any lawful basis or viable thought-through plan?
Yeah. At the behest of people with vested interests.
No, and you sound surprised that he's... done what he's done. Pleasantly surprised.
I am, because, I mean, to be honest, let's all be fair. I mean, I don't mean this disparagingly about him, but he isn't the greatest charismatic personality.
No, but God save us from charismatic personalities, mate.
Yeah, we had that with Boris.
And they've got one in America at the moment. Nigel Farage is supposed to be a charismatic personality, but I do take your point. Everybody likes a little bit of stardust.
I mean, yeah, I just feel that this week, we've seen the man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, cometh the hour. Cometh the man is the phrase that springs to mind as you speak. Thank you, Cajun. We're a long way out from a general election, but will this still be in your thoughts when you decide how to cast your vote next time round?
100%, because I look at the intelligence and how people construct an argument, how they then persuade the country. And if the people who are pushing for war, if this is their level of intelligence, then God help us.
Well, yeah, I mean, we kind of knew what their level of intelligence was, didn't we? Because of those four donkeys of the Krapopolips that I keep banging on about every flipping day. But if I didn't, then people, they'd be allowed to pretend it had never happened. How you can ignore the proven idiocy of the people who supported Boris Johnson, austerity, Brexit and Liz Truss. And now Donald Trump, because it's very hard to find people who don't love Donald Trump if they did love those four things. Thank you, Cajun. So that's 1-0. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. I'll do it now, because otherwise I'll forget. And also because you're bullying me a bit, aren't you? Be honest. Sending me all these texts about how I've forgotten the hook and tease again. I hadn't forgotten it again. I was saving it for a little bit later. But if I save it for a little bit later, I'll forget it. And then you'll bully me even more. So this is for the bullies. Have you got your tiny violin ready? Can we get a sound effect for a tiny violin? Or is that going to be too hard? So you're too busy clapping yourself. Should have been... What does a tiny violin sound like? It sounds like a normal violin, but tinier. Like a kind of... That's not high enough, is it? So the tinier it is, the higher it would go? So that's the sound of a tiny violin. It's quite a grown-up show, this. It's been a really good week, hasn't it? We had some amazing calls, diplomats, academics, experts, all sorts ringing in. I hope they're not listening now to me try and provide my own tiny violin soundtrack. Here's the story, anyway. Wealthy Dubai residents race back to UAE to avoid tax bills. Can you believe it? Dubai residents stuck abroad because of the Iran war are trying to return home to avoid incurring large tax bills by spending too long outside the Emirate, according to travel executives and tax lawyers. It's reported in the Financial Times. Some are turning to private jet hire in order to prevent them being disqualified from the UAE's generous tax status, which has no income tax on individuals, investors, or most companies. And the story continues with testimony from private jet entrepreneurs and international lawyers and tax advisors and all the rest of it. So nothing says patriotic, does it, like being so desperate to avoid paying taxes in your country of origin and birth that you're trying to fly back to a place that was and still is under potential attack from Iranian drones. This is also one of those things about wealth, isn't it? And the O'Brien, have you got enough paradigm? If you're that wealthy, you wouldn't be. Right, you'd say, oh, it's all right, we can pay some tax, we're really wealthy. We'll go back to avoiding it next year, but let's not fly back to Dubai while it's being, while it's under attack from Iranian drones. But that's a very naive grasp of what wealth means to really wealthy people, because really wealthy people will never have enough wealth. Otherwise, they wouldn't have become really wealthy people. But anyway, there is the tiny violin. Simon's in Preston. Simon.
James, I've been trying to concentrate whilst you've been playing your violin. You're a nightmare.
I'm sorry.
I will try and make my point without bursting out laughing.
Please. Please.
Okay. This is a
very serious business. Of course it is. I'm aware of that. That's why I've gone a bit giddy, because I've been keeping...
I know, don't blame you.
Oh, thank you.
The world has gone mad.
Basically, to
make the point, I have no political affiliation to anybody, really.
Right.
I voted Labour last time for the first time in my life, because I'm just desperate for the country to be run well. That's all I'm interested in.
Yeah.
I just want it to work, you know, just get on with life. And I have been very disappointed with Starmer on quite a few occasions, the fact he tried to ape Nigel Farage on various points and trying to bow to the right-wing press where whatever he's going to do, he's going to be damned. It's pointless. I just want them to get their head down and get on with the job. However, there has been some real highlights where he really has shown leadership. And that was the first time it emerged when he created the Coalition of the Willing. And the horrendous treatment of Zelensky, he showed real, real leadership then, real leadership. And then, obviously, he's been through the mill, there's been the Mandelson situation and all those other things. But the thing we've got to remember, this situation we're in now, thank God we've got him.
Yeah.
Because he is using a measured approach, and he's looking back at history. You know, the Iraq War in 2003... The legacy of that for the Iraqi people, and also I want to make clear to the listeners, Saddam Hussein is abhorrent. What's happening over in Iran is abhorrent.
Yeah.
But look what happened when we went wading in, and they had more of a plan than we have now. So I have to say, congratulations to Keir Starmer for holding firm in a really, really tricky situation. And he has to be admired. He deserves a massive pat on the back. And I am a Keir Starmer. I find him too dithery at times, but on this one, I think he's spot on.
Do you think it's his background? Do you think he is just so much more sure-footed in the territory where he spent his entire life? Because it's really telling that he was writing articles in 2003 about the legal basis for going to war in Iraq. So it's
it's hard to say, James, because I don't know him. He was not very charismatic and all that sort of stuff. But thank God he's not, you know. Various world leaders we've got at the moment who have charisma. Farage, my God, he's terrifying. Trump, terrifying. And these are various other hotheads around the world. You know, I've been listening to the news, and when I was listening to your programme, and the chap Simon, what's he called?
Marks.
Yeah. The things he was talking about, these people being given positions of power,
yeah.
I was thinking, the world has gone absolutely stark raving mad. What's going on here?
And then you turned on the radio and there was a supposedly serious current affairs presenter doing an impression of a tiny violin playing Greensleeves.
I'll tell you, I can do you a better violin impersonation than you. I can whistle it if you want,
That's next week's show. 12:31, we'll just do an entire hour of people ringing in to... No, we won't. Matt Hewitt has the headlines.
The Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, has declined to rule out UK offensive action in the Iran war. The government's current position is that British bases can only be used in a defensive capacity. Mr. Lammy has also told LBC that more charter planes are heading to the Middle East to help Britain's return after the first landed at Stansted this morning. British Airways has announced it'll continue operating daily commercial rescue flights from Oman until at least the middle of next week. On day six of the war, Israel says 50 jets have struck an underground bunker in the heart of Tehran. Earlier, Donald Trump said he thought a ground invasion would be a waste of time. And one other story, four men have been arrested on suspicion of helping Iran's intelligence service. They're accused of spying on locations and people linked to the Jewish community in London. LBC weather. Cloudy for England and Wales with light rain in the east and southeast. Sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland. Highs of 14 Celsius.
This is LBC.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £169 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air. Woo! Wow, you really don't care.
Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex Business Card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:34 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we continue our contemplations of this week's events and indeed Keir Starmer's handling of the situation, culminating yesterday in what was pretty clearly a mission statement. He sees his job as providing level-headed leadership, calm, level-headed leadership in the national interest, and he pledged to do so in the face of enormous pressure to do otherwise, albeit that the pressure is coming entirely from the media and political enemies, not from the British public. And we have observed a couple of times this week that one of the maddest elements of this cheerleading for more war that is coming from all of the usual suspects is their apparent ignorance of or forgetfulness regarding what happened in Iraq. And it is to that point that Calvin Bailey directed his attentions in a rather splendid and rather short piece, actually, for the Fabian Society earlier this week that you may not have seen yet, but I really think that you should check it out. Before that, though, Calvin, who joins me now, sorry, the article was from last year, but it was brought to our attention earlier this week. A quick word on who you are for the tiny number of listeners who may not be aware.
So I'm Labour MP for Leighton and Wanstead. Some 25 or 26 years ago, I joined the Royal Air Force, became a pilot, was a commander of 903 Expeditionary Air Wing in Cyprus, which is the combat wing that operates out of Cyprus. Prior to that, I had flown missions with C-130 aircraft in the initial phases of the Iraq War in 2003.
So, using that as a lens through which to observe the events of this week, what are you concerned about, or what are you worried that people haven't properly clocked?
Well, I think that one of the affronts, actually, is that the consequences of the Iraq War were the loss of 179 people, and some of those were friends of mine. And the big lesson that we took away from that was in all wrapped up in a 7-year inquiry, £13 million of UK taxpayers' money, called the Chilcot report, or it came out in the Chilcot report. And the Chilcot inquiry was kind of a landmark moment, and we as defence planners were given guidance. It's out there for people to look at, called The Good Operation, and it lays out a checklist for the things that you need to consider when you are going to go and commit our forces to not to war, for any kind of operation. Mm. There's certain questions that you need to be able to ask, and unfortunately, we have seen unserious politicians trying to make political headway out of this, when the lessons from Iraq and the reasons and methods by which we go about planning military operations are clearly laid down there for us.
That's amazing. Most people listening won't be aware of that, and we'll look a little bit more at the detail of it shortly. But it occurs to me first that we're going beyond the simple vagaries of the lessons learned from Iraq, which of course, yeah, I think 41% of the public think made the world a less safe place. I don't know the exact number of people who still think it was a good idea, but it's a fraction of what it was before it started. So it's not just that we haven't learned the lessons of the Iraq War, we haven't learned the lessons of the lessons.
Exactly. Some of the discussions around the legal principles. So if you were to look at the Chilcot report and ask yourself the things that you would consider, the legal aspect of it isn't actually number one, it's about number five. You know, the first thing that you would do if you're deciding to take someone on in the street is make the assessment as whether you are going to win, otherwise you wouldn't swing the first punch, would you?
No.
So you have to understand, before you do anything, what is it you're being asked to undertake? And you'll hear people talking about the very specific, like, what is the operation that you are going to do? And we've seen over the course of the week, from the Trump administration, machinations about whether this is regime change, whether this is about dealing with a ballistic missile program, or any number of ideas.
Did you miss the Armageddon argument?
No, I didn't.
That's on the list as well.
Well, there you go. But the problem is that any one of these things requires an entirely different military package and will commit you over a different amount of time.
Wow, so they're different wars. So every different justification would be for a different type
and
of war.
Also,
and they're contradictory, conflicting and contrasting.
Of course, and also those parameters change. So there is what people didn't understand or wasn't very well communicated, if I'm honest, over the weekend, was that initial decision when the US comes and says, and this is a very important point here, when the US comes and says, right, we're going to go and do an operation, and the UK then takes that and decides whether it's legal or not. That's one part of the discussion. When that decision's made, let's assume that we've just said we can't be part of it. That doesn't mean that once that has taken place, that you don't have to go through that entire process again a couple of hours later on the basis of what's happened in front of you. Again, it's like standing next to your mate that has decided to punch the bloke instead, and then you standing there and saying afterwards, well, you know what, I'm still not going to wade in, stop him throwing the blows. Like, it's two different calculus. But the thing is, your mate has decided on his own to make that decision, and you aren't complicit in that decision. but you have to deal with the consequences of it. And that's why they're very separate. And there was this discussion about, well, he's done a U-turn. He hasn't. He's made a separate calculus. And that's why it's reasonable in that separate calculus to say, like, we know, and we've heard from the GCC, this is not just the UK.
Yeah.
This is countries across the Middle East. We heard Qatar talking about it today, saying, Iran, stop throwing missiles at us, at our civilian population, our civilian infrastructure, and being intolerant of it. And well, the UK is part of that calculus now, regardless of how we got there. And the really important thing that was not brought up by any of those that were saying, well, we got this wrong, was the US decided to do this without us. So when people say, well, you know, and Kemi said, well, you know, we should have been showing support. There is also part of the calculus, which is very much in the Chilcot report, that says when you are, what happens if you don't do this? What happens if we don't offer them the use of Chagos? Well, they went and did it anyway.
Wouldn't have made
so
any difference.
So it might have been more difficult,
sure,
but that's not part of our calculus.
No.
That's part of their calculus. So, like, that again is something that should have been tackled quite head on. We weren't needed. This is symbolic.
I kind of worked that out. My callers worked that out. I think we'd worked that out by pretty much
lunchtime.
Monday lunchtime, yeah, actually. Probably, but, yeah. but it perhaps could have been laid out a little bit more clearly. That's when you say it wasn't handled as well.
Yeah, no,
it could have
been. I'm not, I haven't been a politician that long.
No.
And I don't really like, I think it's important that we educate our public and we speak about complex things in a complex way. And that's what I was appreciative of the PM in trying to do, is especially on Monday evening when he came and said, look, these are the situations that I've been to. And what I'd really hope for is that other politicians were serious about this at the moment, because the big thing that comes out of this for the UK is our defence isn't in a good way.
Mm.
And when we start having discussions about, so the very next thing that you decide, or part of the calculus whenever you're going to do anything, is it's whether it's sustainable. And one of the things, if you look, so there's been a lot of discussion about our Type 45s. We tried to purchase 12 Type 45s in 2003. They became too expensive. We made that 6. So someone took the risk that it would be lower than the required number. But the infrastructure allowed you to use 6 more adaptively. At some point between then and now, someone then reduced the number of bays that you could service those ships in, because that was another calculus that was made in another defence review. Now, these span governments, but the point is that at the moment that you go to war, at the moment the flag went up, that doesn't mean you can suddenly bring forward the car that you've had waiting in the garage for 6 months that is having its whole...
It's up on bricks.
You know, it's up on bricks and it's having its chassis replaced. It is not reasonable to say, well, why didn't you just bring it out? Because some of these maintenance programs are, they're years, they're very tightly scheduled and you can't afford to miss a gap. And so some of the calculuses weren't brought upon us. And that's why some of the decisions that are made might, you can argue that they don't appear as coherent perhaps as people would like, but that is a result of the massive underinvestment that we've had in defence, and we need to wake up to it now.
There was one participant in PMQs this week who was either didn't understand or didn't care about what you've just described.
Oh, it's Kemi Badenoch. I mean, it's just there's more than that.
Go on.
Probably. But, you know, I think one of the things is that actually what we would hope for from a serious opposition leader is to come out and at moments like this, when the nation, we're talking about our collective national security, is for those people to come forward and say, look, how do we get through this together as a nation? And what is required of me as the member of the opposition to make sure that we make this argument a salient one, then to challenge. Now, the person that is always against this is Mr. Farage, who for some reason seems to think that we need to lobby against our country.
Mm.
You know, he's off in the States right now and he will be lobbying against British interests. And that's just unacceptable.
Including British military interests.
Entirely. I really cannot square the calculus that he makes when he goes to the States to talk our country down, to talk down the deals that we have done. They're not me. It wasn't me that came up with the Chagos deal. This was done by the Conservative government in the main. And it was something that was done by politicians to to remove. The interesting thing is, had the Chagos deal had been done, it wouldn't have been UK sovereign territory from which the US would have launched from. And therefore, we wouldn't have been part of the kill chain, is what it's called, wouldn't have been part of the legal decision to launch those forces on phase one. It wouldn't have made a blind bit of difference. So those people...
Hang on, if the Chagos deal had been signed, Trump wouldn't have needed UK...
I don't think we, let's see what the lawyers come back with, but I can shoot from the hip.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that if that is not UK, the problem is, if it was UK sovereign territory, we would have been part of that decision calculus. If it wasn't sovereign UK territory, then we wouldn't have, and they could have acted anyway.
So I
don't understand, and this is the nonsense of those people that, again, have been trying to take a political point away from this. Like, we wouldn't be where we are. But Mr. Farage going off and lobbying against our national interests is deeply unpatriotic and it's deeply upsetting.
Probably not got enough time to try and work out what motivates him, but there is a plurality of professional commentary in this country, chiefly newspapers, some broadcasters, who seem to be entirely at odds with the public polling, with the public opinion on this. We've spent 2 hours this morning, Calvin, trying to work out why right-wing media is so committed to the idea of following Donald Trump relatively blindly into a war that may well turn out to be illegal, but which clearly doesn't meet any of the lessons of Chilcot or Iraq or even Afghanistan, if you wanted to add to the mix, and Libya as well, if we had the time. Do you have a view on why that is? I mean, is it just a business model? Or, I mean, you don't have to answer this question.
Some of it is... the unfortunate thing is... Some of it's misplaced. I mean, one of the things that I'm proudest of is the 4 years that I served in US Special Operations Command, where fighting and as part of the US military. I take great pride in the military medal that I was awarded by the President of the United States, and I am very proud of the relationship we have with the Americans. And indeed, that's where a lot of my views come from, because I'm still in discussion with those people. I have a very live set of message groups where we're talking about this, people that are serving in the US military, and I understand their view and values on this. But the countries are rational, and I am reminded of 1957 and Suez, when our nation was left out alone in a similar situation to this, and the US didn't come to our aid. And so I know when people say, you know, this is a hemorrhaging of the relationship. Mm. This is not in terms of post Second World War. Is this a big crisis? It is not. So don't try and feed your news cycles. Try and do justice to our national security and democracy by having a grown-up discussion about what is necessary and also what is right.
Why do you think Trump started this war?
Well, that's not for me to decide. I mean, I think the thing, if I were to hazard a guess, and I could do this because I'm not a representative of the government, but I would say that the thing to remove from region is the ballistic missile program more than anything. We've seen that they as yet haven't struck any of the nuclear sites. The ballistic missiles are really important because they mean that Iran can extend its terror physically over its neighbours. Were that to be removed, you can remove the U.S. effectively from the Middle East. If they degrade these ballistic missiles, then all of our allies within the region will be able to respond to Iran in the way that they can't whilst this threat looms over them. And that will liberate the US from the Middle East in a way that it hasn't been, and will probably allow it to move towards the Pacific, which is one of the things it's been trying to do. So get yourselves out of Europe by making Europe more capable of its security calculus. Move yourself out of the Middle East by not leaving what is a quite despicable and disgusting regime that has presided over with an iron hand a nation for a generation.
Again, a little reminder for people who've been listening all morning that it's perfectly possible to describe the regime as despicable and disgusting while also explaining the reasons why wading in with the Americans would not have been the most optimal way to behave. Very short time, briefly, why is Keir Starmer so firm on this? Have you been surprised by his stance, or is it what you would expect from him?
I think it's serious. It's a serious and sensible stance. And at moments like this, we see that leadership and people are grateful for it. And we have to wake up to the seriousness of the geopolitical situation that we're in at the moment. And that requires, and there's kind of a bit of a plea here for the media, it requires us to treat things, serious things, seriously, and to not debase discussions into binary with, you know, are you for or against America?
Oh, on that, finally, then, on that precise point, have any Tories privately backed what you've been saying?
Yes. You'd hope so. I would. And it's not just them, it's also the Liberal Democrats. And the things to take away is we all recognise the seriousness of the situation and that we need to mobilise the country's understanding of just how fragile our defence situation is in the UK at the moment, because it has been exposed by extending it to somewhere else.
Indeedy. What a fantastic and revealing analysis. Thank you, says Phil in Germany. This chap is super, says Chris. I like the cut of his jib, says Beatrice. He sounds like a good egg. I'm glad that he's Labour. But here's what I want you to remember, Calvin. Friday, March the 6th, 2026, Calvin Bailey, Labour MP for Leighton and once said, I think this might be the first time you've ever got, and this is from Emma, future PM material. Remember the date, it's 12:52.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Warnings of economic disaster if the war in the Middle East escalates. Prime Minister Keir Starmer calls for calm. Kelly Badenoch hints at how she would increase defence spending. But what about the impact on cost of living?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
12:54 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Calvin Bailey was my guest's name. I haven't seen a response to a politician appearing on this programme quite like that in a very long time. And it was because he tried to avoid the polarity, you know, the deliberate divisive politics, talking about the national interest. And that's not partisan. The national interest shouldn't be confined to the party of government. It should be something that everybody in politics cares about. But interesting to reflect upon Farage scurrying off to Washington, D.C. to lobby against our own interests with a foreign leader. Crikey. He'll be telling us next that Vladimir Putin is the politician in the world that he admires most. Quite a harrowing clip for you now from an incredible and inspiring, but sometimes harrowing episode of Full Disclosure. It's another Labour MP, but somebody with a very different background. And actually, before we get on to Naz Shah, for it is she, have a look at Calvin Bailey's Wikipedia page. I need to have a look at that and then reflect on what you've done with your life. That's what I usually do in these kind of circumstances. But anyway, this is Naz Shah, the Labour MP, who has herself had the most extraordinary existence, reflecting on the moment she learned the truth about her mother's murder conviction. She had believed for years that her mother had been the victim of a miscarriage of justice because her mother had kept from her the abuse that she had suffered at the hands of the man that she finally killed. Pragna Patel, you need to know before you hear this, was the director of Southall Black Sisters, a women's rights organisation in London, in the UK. And it was Pragna Patel's work with Naz's mum that essentially blew the lid off the entire story. So I don't know how much you know about Naz Shah, but you will know a lot more by the time you finish Full Disclosure, and hopefully you'll read her new book as well. Here is a small taste of this interview.
It's to your mum's credit that you knew nothing. It may seem like an odd thing to say, but it's to your, because your mum was protecting you from him and from the knowledge of what he was doing to her. So I think I know you did. You dined together. To you, he's still affable. There's some sort of moral somersaults that you've had to do as a younger woman because you know he's got his own wife and family elsewhere, and you know that he's sort of, there's something going on with your mum, and you're obviously very uncomfortable about the men coming to the house and going upstairs with your mother. But you still sort of think that he's an essentially benign presence at your dinner table until that night.
Until even then, I grieved for him. James, when he died, I genuinely grieved for him. I was, you know, when I was arrested, because my mum and I were both arrested because I'd made the meat curry the night that he ate at our house, you know. It, you know, to me, he was Uncle Asim. I actually grieved for him. So I didn't know until 1995, until Pragna went to see my mum, pieced it all together, worked out what happened. Because to Pragna, to me, I was so, Mike, this is a miscarriage of justice. This is, you know, there's no way my mother could hurt anybody. Because to me, my mother couldn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
You know, she couldn't hurt a fly, could my mum? So how could she take a life and a life of that person who's helpful to us, you know, who's in our lives? It just didn't square up. It's, you know, once we were told, it was really clear, the forensics were really clear. Everything was really clear about the poison that had been consumed in our house. So she was banged to rights. But when she told the story, she told it to Pragna Patel, and she told it because Pragna was very clear. And this is what I often say to people. When you go in, had my mother been arrested by a white woman even, maybe they'd have had a different understanding. You know, because it's clear to you she's killed, but why is it? Is there another way of looking at this? Is it a manipulative woman for a house? Or is it, look at a history, is it a destitute woman and there's something else going on? Nobody inquired, nobody looked at all of that. And the first person who did was Pragna Patel. And the minute she looked at it, it all unravelled. And then it made sense how she, my mother, behaved, how she rocked in front of a fire, how she used to, you know, curse that she hasn't got enough money to, you know, poison herself and the kids. Yeah. And she was destitute and she was poor and she was, you know, and trying to bring money together and always working different jobs. Then it made sense.
It's an incredible story that Naz Shah tells in her new book, Honoured, because the title comes from the fact that she herself was the victim of forced marriage. The family were abandoned by her father, which led her mother into the dire straits that you have just heard described. And it's a wonderful interview with a wonderful woman who has written an incredible book. That's it from me for another week. We'll do it all again on Monday morning from 10. Don't forget to download the official LBC app so you can keep up to date with everything. It's free. Tom Swarbrick Albrecht will be with you on this radio station from 4 o'clock, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. Now, we're not fully there yet, but petrol and diesel prices have started to increase. UK gas prices almost doubled in less than a week. There might be a deep impact on shipping prices that in turn could obviously hit consumers later on. That's you and me. Fertilizer prices are up by a fifth. Because of this war in the Middle East, food prices again, inflation's downward trend, which we've been just about starting to feel, could be a lot less certain because of this war. There are warnings of economic disaster. The flights bringing Brits home have started in with a bit more energy. We'll see where that goes. And we'll talk as well about the banning of the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. It's a yes from me.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Royal Air Force jets could strike Iranian missile sites being used to attack British interests in the Middle East. That's according to the Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, who says there's a legal basis for them to do so. The government's faced criticism over the defence of the RAF Akrotiri base in Cyprus, which was struck by a drone. The Shadow Defence Secretary, James Cartledge, told LBC Britain shouldn't rely on America to safeguard British interests.
The US are helping to guard us. It's still a very close relationship. I don't agree with everything Donald Trump says, but we have to recognise the world as it is. They remain a great ally of the United Kingdom as a country. I've seen from the MOD how closely we work together, and they are currently providing that umbrella from their naval destroyers to protect our base because Keir Starmer acted too slowly to send our destroyer out there.
The Conservatives say they'd reinstate the two-child benefits cap to boost defence spending. Israel's military claims it's dismantled an underground bunker built for Iran's supreme leader. The IDF says 50 fighter jets have struck the compound, which it believes was still being used following Ali Khamenei's death last Saturday. A second government charter flight to bring UK nationals back from the Middle East is due to depart Oman this evening. The first arrived at Stansted earlier. Fazal, who was on the flight, says the British Embassy staff in Muscat were great.
We were left without some communication, just so it would be better if we'd have known a few things here and there and been kept more apprised of the situation.
Yeah.
And they really took it seriously, so they're really working very hard, very sincerely.
Four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. The investigation relates to the suspected surveillance of locations and individuals linked to the Jewish community in London. The group were detained at addresses in Barnet and Watford by counter-terror officers earlier today. In other news, following Lord Mandelson's arrest last week on suspicion of misconduct in public office, where he was subsequently released on bail, the Met Police now say a 72-year-old man has been released under investigation. They say their investigation remains ongoing. And the price of a stamp is going up from next month. Royal Mail says second class is rising by 4p to 91 pence, while a first class stamp is increasing by 10p to £1.80. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 9 points at 10,423. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for England and Wales with light rain in the east and southeast, sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, highs of 4 to 14 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you if you're just joining us here at LBC. The usual reminder that we will bring you all the latest developments on the war in the Middle East, particularly focused on Iran, but clearly Iran itself then going on to attack many other countries too. It's still affecting many civilians in the Middle East who want to try and get home. Those who have just come home certainly have a story to tell, don't they, about the weight and the stress and the pressure. So if you are among them or you have relatives who've just come back or are waiting to come back, we're very keen to hear your stories because it gives us a picture of life on the ground there, a very clear picture. There have been urgings, not least from our own Prime Minister Keir Starmer, for the war to be de-escalated. There's no intimation that that's going to happen from some of the public utterances of both the President and the Defence Secretary, US Defence Secretary, to be clear, Pete Hegseth, and a video put out overnight on social media by the White House, which was extraordinary in its gung-ho or sort of silliness, really. I mean, I know there's nothing silly about what's going on. It's very serious indeed. But some of the social media offerings from the White House and others in America are really quite alarming when you think of the seriousness of this. Not least, I mean, clearly the most serious thing is danger to life and limb and the people in Iran and beyond. But there are massive economic threats with this war if it doesn't de-escalate anytime soon. Let's talk about that more with Mark Leahy, former spokesperson for NATO and former defence correspondent as well for the BBC. Mark, always good to have you on the programme. Good afternoon to you.
Nothing heard.
What's your reading of the sort of urgings from people like Keir Starmer?
No sound.
Oh, no sound. Okay, right. We better, well, let's improve that connection, which we clearly don't have. I don't think Mark can hear me. Passengers have been describing their surreal scramble, is how one person described it, to reach the first government flight out of the Middle East that has taken off and landed, took off from Oman. There are others due as well, although it's hard to know. And I imagine there are good, solid security reasons why you wouldn't necessarily advertise precisely when flights were taking off, because an awful lot of missiles and jets and planes are flying around that airspace. So you would want to be very careful about who went where and at what point. We are still trying to get the line to Mark Leahy. I think we will have it in a moment. Just have him on the phone, I think. But let me bring you the details on that. The flight that has landed, it was originally scheduled to leave on Wednesday. We talked about it, didn't we? And I know lots of you have been calling with the things that your family are facing. 140,000 there or thereabouts Britons are in the region, and they've registered their presence with the UK's Foreign Office after US-Israeli strikes on Iran prompted those retaliatory strikes earlier in the week by Iran across the region in upwards of 10 different countries. I think we can now talk to Mark on the phone, the good old trusty phone. Hello, Mark.
Yes, hello there. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Sorry about that confusion. There are calls for de-escalation and calm, and there's no real evidence of that happening at the moment, is there?
No, I think it's performative calls, and frankly, it's a bit wasted. The US have decided what they're going to do, and they're going to keep doing it. And nobody's listening to the Iranians anyway. The Iranians are saying they want to talk to mediators, but I mean, frankly, it's a waste of time to de-escalation. The US is on its course, and that's the course it is, and you're wasting your time to speak.
And residents in the Iranian capital described last night as the worst night so far. And we know that there's a great deal of fear, less destruction, but a great deal of fear in countries around Iran as well. What's your biggest fear here, Mark, having looked at the elements in this story and seen so many others before?
Well, I think it's how does this end, which so many people have said. I think the US can continue inflicting a huge amount of destruction and really very, very heavily degrade, get rid of, destroy a lot of the munitions. But if the Iranians just want to keep going, how much do they need to fire to keep the place destabilized? Mm-hmm. So suppose you take out 90% of their missiles. Well, they really only need to fire one a day to keep airports closed. And